Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers! This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Tim. JB's there.
Hello, Timothy.
And there's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Now, I'm the odd one out here, because there is a video which you can go and see on our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/eggchasers. We're also facebook.com/eggchasers. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. But you can go and... How come I haven't got these socks? What's going on?
Yeah, well, I don't know is the answer, mate. You do have these socks. Well, you don't have these socks because you're not in shorts. Phil's been to the gym. You do have a pair.
Okay.
And I just don't know... I don't know why I've got them, to be fair. A box came to my house and it said Egg Chasers. It wasn't delivered to me, so, you know, and in it were three pairs of socks.
Oh, okay, that explains it. Sorry, I've just turned up in the rugby dungeon and you've both got matching socks on, I thought.
Three pairs of Stance socks.
Is it a Stance? Is
what
it?
What's the point? What are they?
I don't know. They're lovely. I mean,
okay.
They're very comfortable.
Very comfortable.
Hey, listen, I'm not. We don't give away shout outs just for sending us a box of socks, actually. Yeah, it's got to be better than socks for a shout. Sending us stuff's fine.
Yeah, yeah. But... send us anything you want. Like, but, you know, the curiousness about the whole thing was like, there's no name on it. I can't remember asking for socks. I can't remember giving out my address for socks. So I don't know how we've ended up with these socks.
For Novichok?
Oh, crikey. Ooh,
my feet are a bit itchy now you mentioned that,
yeah.
Tim.
Right, on this podcast today, we're going to be talking about, there's a whole load of things been going on in the rugby world, aside from the domestic rugby in the Pro 14, in the Premiership, Top 14 and the like, and the Rugby Championship. We've got an open letter from Bath and some coaching juggling. We've got an international retiree. We've got World Rugby's leaked plan. We've got all sorts of other stories besides. But I want to start by picking up from last week, JB.
Yes, please do.
There's a file I've put on your computer.
Oh,
so
you have?
The way I want to tee this up is, on last week's podcast, we were talking about England's new defence coach, John Mitchell.
Yes.
And we were picking up on the fact that you think defence coach is the easiest job in rugby, because all you have to do is shout line speed and do it in a motivating fashion. Correct.
That's exactly. And also have access to wild animals.
Okay.
And have either an Antipodean or a Rugby League Heartland accent.
Well, it turns out Eddie Jones must listen to the podcast because your suggestion, I think John Mitchell might now be out of a job. And I think at the England training camp early this week, Eddie Jones might have taken your advice and hired a new defence coach.
No, I'm not having it, mate.
G'day, Ed. I'm Rusty. Rusty Crow, winner of an Oscar, owner of a rugby league club, and now I am here sat upon my trusty steed to make us the greatest defensive unit on earth. But first things first, tops off, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Come on, tops off. There we go. Looking good there, Courtney. Men... we will defend our gain line the way I defended the gates of Rome. The way my legion fought has won on the battlefields of Gaul. Wave after wave, they may attack. Be they Celts, barbarians, or New Zealand savages. But with discipline, and with our line speed, so much line speed, they will fall. And then, when the battle is won, we will be in Elysium, which is the... name of a nightclub just around the corner. And we will drink, men, and we will toast a day that people will speak of for eternity.
Right. Oh,
Eddie, defense is sorted, mate. Now get this bunch of pommies scoring some f***ing tries.
There you go. He's in.
Wonderful. He's wonderful. In. I'll tell you
so
that.
Blind speed.
Yeah, I mean, I was literally about to high shot Phil into internet suite. That's how I felt.
Excellent.
It was quite something.
Well, come on then, Phil. As you've just been high-shotted into the wall by JB, I'll make up for it by letting you select where we start this podcast. Where do you want to go?
Ooh, probably the best game of the week.
Any other sort of talking points?
I mean, sorry, we get to game.
Talking points.
Let's stick with England for a second then.
Okay.
And go on to the retiree.
Yes.
The international retiree at the tender age of 28.
Yep.
With 59 caps to his name. And incredibly tender age for a prop, particularly.
Mm. And with 11 months to go until a World Cup.
Yeah. What was your first reaction to the news?
There's more to this than meets the eye.
Yes. I thought, this can't just be a standard. There's something going on here behind the scenes. What's the actual story going on that we're not hearing, is what I thought, because it just didn't make sense.
These things don't. You know, they don't. I thought the same thing. But it actually seems exactly as it sounds. It sounds like he's just bored of rugby and the travel and wants to spend more time with his family. That's it, I think.
From what I've seen and what I've read, and from what I've seen on Marlowe's own kind of Instagram and social media accounts, I think that's probably it.
Yeah.
Although I can't help but feeling if the kind of feeling around the squad, the culture, the mentality, and the coaching side of things were all that little bit better, the potential of a World Cup would have been enough to keep him in there.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is a bit of speculation there because we don't know whether he would have retired if it was Stuart Lancaster asking him to draw pictures of his family on jerseys, or if it's Eddie Jones making him do intensive fitness on every international break. We don't know that, do we?
Eddie Jones making him be judo flipped around the place by Maro Itoje.
I can't imagine that's not good fun.
Having stood next to Maro Itoje again, you forget every time you step away and don't see him and then stand next to him, I can't tell you the shape that guy
is. Do you know
what,
though? I know you say that, but by far the most impressive man, or men, Itoje wasn't in the squad then, but prior to the World Cup, me and Brim Williams, friend of the pod, went to Twickenham to meet, you know, the players. And by far, Marlowe was the most intimidatingly shaped guy.
His upper body, his shoulders and traps are enormous. Itoje, when you see him...
And Cruz is the one.
When you see... Yeah, Cruz is enormous. When you see Itoje up front, he's just such a... I don't know, such athletic individual.
Yeah.
And he probably doesn't come across on TV all the time. He's a very handsome man.
He is.
Really, really good-looking chap.
Yeah, but he's not a menacing shape, is he? He's not a menacing imposing.
Oh, he is.
Do you think?
Oh, my God, yeah. The width, his shoulder-to-waist ratio is frightening.
To be fair, I only saw him in his going-out clothes later on that night.
Oversized T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, actually. So, I don't know.
But anyway, Joe Marler.
I tell you who looks great in a T-shirt, FYI, is Alex Corbisiero.
Corbs, yeah.
Corbs looks bloody fantastic.
Looks great in a vest doing deadlifts on Instagram.
In his tight black T-shirt. Looked fantastic.
Hell yeah.
So
the narrative that seems to have come out of this more than any other is people, and this could be just circumstantial, but people seem to be suggesting that, or that there's the undercurrent, the subtext, that Eddie Jones has basically forced Joe Marler into this by being too attritional and too hardcore in his training methods.
Now, when you say that, are you saying that's a subtext because everyone's saying explicitly it's not, to the point that you are left with no other conclusion than it is?
No, I think
like they're protesting too much about how it's nothing to do with that.
Well, no, it's more, I think this is more just the rugby fraternity that aren't the people that are on telly and writing columns. No, even people that are writing columns have suggested that it's too hard for England. What I would suggest is reading Ben Kay's article in the Times, because I think that was quite balanced. He suggested that, quite possibly Joe Marler has been... you know, feels like he's been overworked and to the point he's not loving it, and the England camp is intense. But Ben Kay also talks about his own experiences before the 2003 and 2007 World Cups, when he described it as comfortably the most gruelling, hardest things he's ever had to do going into an England camp. And maybe that to a degree, definitely to a degree, that is necessary to win a World Cup. So I don't think suddenly they should all be just writing motivational things on shirts and doing touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's for me, it's got to be to the point, the training and maybe the travel, but the training specifically has got to be to the point where it is putting people right on the edge of breaking point.
That makes no sense to me, by the way. That makes zero sense to me. The word from the England camp was that it's brutal, brutal fitness again.
Yeah.
Mid-season. Well, yeah, they are mid-season. They're so, just post-pre-season, aren't they?
Yeah, mid-season maybe not as much because you should have some miles under your belt. You should have a full pre-season.
Well, it should be good
belt.
To go. They're just
good
to go.
Yeah, yeah. So that side of things, but some of the training sessions need to be, they have to be brutal.
It should be the hardest thing they ever do. Well, not ever do. It should be harder than anything they've done.
Well, I mean, you're the world's best, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
you want to be.
SAS training's pretty hard. You know, and there's arguably more than there are English international rugby players currently serving. So, you know, it is really, really difficult.
Yeah.
I understand it. I don't sympathise with it, which is what everyone's saying. I mean, there's a lot of stuff like, dad is the most important thing in the world. Yeah, get over yourself, right? I think being busy and being wanted and required in your profession is, you know, the greatest thing. And although I understand what he's done, I think in time he might come back to regret it because it's a short career and he's right at the pinnacle. I mean, he's a good prop. Yeah, if he wins the World Cup, he could be a great prop. You know, he could be one of the English greats or part of a great team if they win it. So you forego that, but people forego all sorts of things because if there's family involved, it's complex.
Yeah,
and him not being there, it does harm England a little bit.
Yeah,
because he is that good. I mean, in the third test in South Africa,
yeah, he was very good.
He was absolutely sensational.
Yeah, I think actually they miss more than that. I think they miss a guy around the camp too, because he's unusual. I mean, I've interviewed him, and he's almost like, abrasive, but in a good way. Do you know, like, lots of people are quite guarded, and I think that they'll miss that because characters are really important.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the playing side 100%. I think from a wider, he's almost like a senior player without really being one. He's not a nominated senior player, but I bet he's a big voice in camp.
59 caps.
59 caps, yeah.
God, it's 59 caps.
Yeah.
At 28. Yeah. At 28 for a prop as well. Because he would make this World Cup and probably the next one if he wanted
yeah,
to.
Yeah, you're right there. It puts a lot of pressure on Mako.
It certainly does. Mm. And bearing in mind that Mako will be playing a lot in the Premiership.
Yep.
He will be playing Champions Cup. He'll be playing Premiership Knockout. He'll be playing Champions Cup Knockout. He'll be playing Six Nations. There's a lot riding on Mako.
There really is. For that reason, I think we might not have seen the last of Joe Marler in an England shirt even before, even in the next
sevens.
Year. give him a few months rest, and I think I'm much with you. I think fine if he wants to make that decision. Fine, great. Yeah. Thank you for your service. I would go back and say, just to be consistent for anyone that's listened to the podcast for any length of time, I do not like, and this is just me not liking it as a fan. I do not like the principle of players retiring themselves from international rugby. I almost think even if I had a hip replacement and one arm, and if my country called and said they needed me, it's almost like it's my duty. I would be there, however hard and tough it is. That's how I feel. England, and that's a romantic view of international rugby. But that's
right.
That's how I view it.
You're right. Okay, so this is how I would handle it. I would never retire from international rugby, but I would say I'm not going training. And if you want to pick me, you can. But I'm not going to go to your training. I'm not going to go on tour. My phone might be on during the World Cup. It might not be. Hey, give it a call. If you're really desperate, give me a call. That's how I do it.
Well, how about we jump as well? Sort of jumping in towards the games, just dipping our toe into the games, but talking about one individual in particular who, I mean, Sippers is old news now. Whatever, Sippers, we don't care about you anymore.
Yep.
No one's clamouring for you to get in the England squad anymore. Who cares? Alex Good now.
Well,
let's get on the Alex Good train.
Hear me now, believe me later. Because I believe I've been on record on saying he is the best all-round rugby player in England. And I still believe that solidly.
You've said that for years, JB.
He's got good feet. He's got good vision. He can kick. He can beat defenders. There is nothing about Alex Skoud not to like. Maybe, if there's one chink in his armour, maybe his top-end pace isn't quite there. Other than that, I think he's an outstanding rugby player.
I would add to that, so top-end pace and defence, specifically tackling. His positioning is very good.
Yeah.
Tackle completion.
But that could be any Saracen, because that's what they do. I mean,
there is an element of that.
You don't play Owen Farrell and say his lack of tackling is not a problem, but then tell me Alex Goods is.
So he did have...
In different positions where they do different things, admittedly.
He did have... There's two things for me on this. He did have a sensational game. He was absolutely unplayable. But to use that game as a yardstick for playing international rugby is ridiculous.
Go on.
That is, as top-level rugby games go, that is about as far as you can possibly get from an international rugby game.
Yeah, okay. Right, yeah, fine. It's not as far as you could get. I mean, like,
Tok H against Littlebro.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty far away.
I said top-level rugby games go.
All right. Fair enough.
As top-level rugby games go.
Like, Southern Kings and the Dragons were both in top-level rugby games. I get your point. I'm being facetious. Go on.
Even them. that's one thing. Now, the other thing... So this hysteria, the reaction to this game, calling him up for England, it peaked for me with a Sonia McLaughlin...
Okay.
Who said, so he's got ideal skills to play at 12 for England, which I don't disagree with.
Okay.
Necessarily.
Not down with this so far, but
he's never played there. But she went on to back the bit of evidence she went on to back that up with was by saying he's the same size as Ben Teo.
Righto. Sure he's not.
Which struck me as a little bit odd.
Isn't he like 5'10"?
5'10", 5'11", and 13.5 stone.
Yeah, I've met him. He's not big.
Which puts him 4 inches shorter and 3.5 stone lighter. Just over 20 kgs lighter than Ben Teo.
There must be a mix-up there.
So by this logic, Ben Youngs should replace Joe Marler at loose head prop.
Yeah.
Because he's about 4 inches shorter and 20 kg lighter.
Perfect.
And Johnny May is going to be the backup second row to Maori Todgi.
Because
he's 3 inches shorter and about 20 kg lighter.
Nice.
All right, so you're not getting... I'm with you, Phil. I'm not denying, and I wouldn't dare deny, he is an incredibly talented player who should be considered for selection every time an England squad is being pulled together. Hysteria is the right word. The way, and social media, this is what it does, isn't it? Suddenly, Eddie's blind. How can he not see on the strength of a game?
No, not on the strength of a game.
Yeah. Not for you. Your judgment is over years.
Everyone is just
no
going
one was
on
saying
this
2 weeks ago when Eddie's Eddie's squad was announced.
Everyone has just been going on this one game.
My thing about this, and I've seen loads of people, pundits, fans, everyone, saying he should be in the squad. And this happens a lot. People go, oh, I want so-and-so in the squad. So-and-so, how can Eddie not pick so-and-so? If with certain people I see on Twitter and stuff, if every single person that they clamoured for was actually selected by Eddie Jones, there'd be 60 people in every squad.
At least.
So can we make a rule that from now on, if you say you want someone in, you have to also say who you drop.
So I've done this, for example.
Cipriani, would I pick him? Yes, I'd drop Nathan Earl.
I'd have dropped Dylan Hartley.
Right, Don Armand, yes, I'd drop Michael Rhodes. Sam Simmons, yes, I'd drop Zach Mercer.
Ah, I like it, that's good, that's good stuff.
Luke Cowan-Dickey, yes, I'd drop Mark Wilson.
Yep.
Alex Good, possibly. I'd have him or Jason Woodward, and I'd drop Joe fucking a singer.
Sorry, if you...
Done. There you go. But you can't have them all. That's my point. You can't have them all. And some people seem to want to have a go at Eddie, but not say who they don't want.
If you dropped Mark Wilson for anyone, you would be lynched by the working man of Newcastle and by every right-minded rugby fan who wants to see Mark Wilson pull on the England jersey again.
He's having a great season. But that's my point stands. People can agree or disagree with my points, but there's always the principle is you've got to drop someone.
Yeah, look, I agree with you fundamentally, and there is a lot of group behaviour, communal behaviour about Joe Marler. I would say you're probably right. You do have to drop someone, but I'm going to get on my own little bandwagon here because actually I think there's a guy who we need to start a bandwagon for because he's absolutely outstanding. And I'm going to give you some credit, Tim, because you pointed him out to me to start with, because I assume you must have played with your brother Nick at some point. Johnny Williams should be considered for England.
Yeah.
So it's a problem position.
Yep.
He's quick. He's athletic.
He can offload.
He's very strong. And his offloading game, he's still got to develop because he's only 19 or 20. But
well, I think he's 21. 21, okay. Maybe 22 now. But point being, he's been decent for London Irish. He's shown a lot of promise. But he's had two starts for Newcastle.
I think throw him in.
No, but this is what Eddie Jones has done. Lewis Boyce, who? What? Oh, he's in the England squad. Gary Graham, what? Who? What? Oh, he's in the England squad.
Yeah, but Gary Graham's legitimate. Like no, I mean, come Gary, on. There are seven Gary Grahams every time you play one Gary Graham. what Eddie does well, he identifies talent early. Yeah.
You've said it a bunch of times.
He was right. He was just right. It hurts, but he was. I'd say something interesting, though, about these England teams. Like, you do get to the point where they basically make the same mistakes, no matter which way you go. Do you know the old circle? Here's the left wing, here's the right wing, and you loop it all around, the little horseshoe thing, and oh, look, it all ends up as an authoritarian hellhole. Well, it's kind of the same with the...
I thought you meant left and right wing on a rugby pitch then, but yeah. I'm with you. No, politically, left and right wing. Yes, they're both the same. Totalitarian on one end, authoritarian on the other.
And it sort of ends up in the same way, no matter who is coaching. So remember the death throes of the Lancaster regime, where everyone was happy, kumbaya, playing, all that sort of stuff, right? And yet they had a core of players that they wouldn't drop. There's a load of guys who were desperately on form but couldn't get in the team, and he was giving out caps to unproven individuals because they just needed them in the squad. They needed some hope, i.e. Sam Burgess.
Yeah.
Right? Eddie's basically gone and done the same thing.
Yeah, we've done it. You're absolutely... I hear you, totally. We've done this.
But they're two completely different regimes.
No, you're absolutely right.
And I tell you what, this talk about who should be in, who should be out, is only going to get more intense until he actually listens. Because these people might be on the bandwagon, but they are fundamentally correct in identifying Cipriani, in identifying Goode, in identifying all these people, because they are bloody good players and they should be in the England squad.
But to get them in, you've got to make some tough decisions.
I don't think they're that tough, personally.
Well, it depends, because, I would have Goode in over Nathan Earle. So that's not that tough.
I'd have Johnny Williams in.
So,
there we go.
Sticking with international rugby, but moving away from England.
Yeah, go on.
So, there was a World Rugby announcement this week.
Oh, yeah.
About the potential shape of the new calendar.
Right.
And this is the new calendar that was first announced last year, the World Rugby San Francisco announcement.
What do they call it? It's like the San Francisco Conference
Summit, I think, or something like that. I've got the plans here.
Well, the way they talk about it, I can't remember what... Was it the summit? Of course, it sounded almost as important as like the summit in Potsdam. that's how they made it out. I don't understand it because it says two things. It says it's going to replace the summer tours. Understood that. And also,
that is happening. So what is happening in the summer is the international matches are going to be moved from June to July because, wait for it, having them in June disrupted the Super Rugby domestic tournament, and it meant they had to have a break in the middle, which wasn't good. So instead, what that means is in the Northern Hemisphere, they'll finish the season in May, they'll have a month off in June, and then it'll be international rugby in July before a month of pre-season in August. So here's the theme with this all these plans. Brilliant for Southern Hemisphere. Not good for Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, but do you know...
That's my summary of the whole thing.
Do you know who needs the help? It's not us. It's not Ireland and Wales with their full stadium and England with ever-increasing revenues and debt.
It's Georgia and Romania.
Georgia
and Fiji.
Romania.
And Tonga.
But I tell you what, they are getting the help.
Australia.
The Australian game is not in good health. The the South African game is not in good health. I mean, I don't mind actually disrupting our calendar a little bit because I think they're really struggling.
Okay.
You've got internationals.
So,
the
July
watching.
Thing is happening. The other thing is what's happening in the autumn, November international window. Because as we currently have it, we have matches against Southern Hemisphere v Northern Hemisphere. What they have done since the last World Cup is mean that there's more games between the Tier 2 sides and Tier 1 sides. You've seen that with Georgia playing yep. Italy and Scotland twice. So that
Japan playing England.
Japan playing England. So this is the intention to try and spread that around a little bit more. But now they want to completely change it. And Augustin Pichot is leading a kind of Nations League type setup. Basically, a mini World Cup involving the top 12 ranked teams in the world okay. every single November.
So, because it said spring yes. and autumn. Spring and summer, it said.
So my understanding of it would be across 5 game weeks.
Yeah.
So it'd be the same as the Football League of Nations. So you have four groups of 3 teams which play each other in a round-robin style, which then takes... That takes 3 weekends... although each team has 2 games.
Semi-final, final.
And then you have a semi-final, final.
Wait, sorry. Have
so
I been...
it needs 5 game weeks to do
sorry.
That. 3 in November, 2 in the summer.
Get that bit. But the press release said the spring and the summer tours. So in the spring, we play Six Nations. So what?
Nothing's changing there.
Do they call spring tours that in Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, why I'm getting confused.
So the autumn internationals would be spring tours.
So spring slash autumn.
Right, fine, got it. Yeah. Right, that's why I'm confused. Yeah, so I thought they were going to try and incorporate Six Nations into this, and I'm against that.
Yeah, I think they are. There is talk of having to move the Six Nations a week or two in either direction, or a couple of weeks in either direction to allow for everything to take place.
Okay, fine. So
it's a mini World Cup. The top 12 ranked teams would play... minimum of 2 games, maximum of 4. Minimum of 3 games.
No, yeah, 2. Two
minimum
games.
Of 2 games, maximum of 4 games.
Sorry, why exactly?
To get revenue, to get money, and to make it a marketable product.
But this is where I think it's confused because there was some statement, I can't remember the exact percentage, but more than 70% of international games of any given year are effectively friendlies.
Yeah.
So there's a concern.
That's such an assumption that friendly means the same as it means with other sports.
And this is where I have a massive problem because it seems like Pichot, who's championing this, has got this concern that a friendly is somehow devalued.
Well, let's look at Twickenham in 3 weeks' time against New Zealand,
rugby,
shall we?
Yeah, in rugby,
beginning of the end.
The friendlies, they are anything but. They're friendly in name only, and if England get beaten, as they may well do. In 3 home games,
and then that
is a massive, massive problem, particularly because it will be in front of a full 80,000 seater stadium.
Uh-huh. And at that point, we're going to have to go into our predictions, pull out a bit of paper, and I have the name of the next England manager.
Right. So there are a couple of problems, and we don't need to labour this too much. But World Rugby, rugby as a whole, isn't making enough money to sustain itself, particularly in Southern Hemisphere nations. The Rugby Championship, you see half-empty stadiums when it's outside in New Zealand.
Even inside New Zealand,
sometimes, if it's not the Bledisloe match, and then in the Northern Hemisphere, there are some nations that are making a lot of money, and there are others that aren't developing. I thought from the last World Cup, the biggest step forward was Georgia, Romania, Japan, these Tier 2 nations, and that's where the focus should be. My issue with Augustin Pichot's plan is he's taking the top 12 ranked teams, which is going to exclude the majority of these nations from this new format.
But you know there's a second tier competition.
Yeah, I know there's a second tier competition, but between World Cups, Georgia aren't going to play England.
Yeah, but it's promotion relegation.
Yeah, I know.
But only for one team.
Only for one.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. Well, it's whoever's top ranked. But how do the lower ranked teams get the ranking points to go up to the top? My point being, you're going to get the same 8 teams every single year, and you're just going to rotate a few of the lower. It's not going to fulfil the objective of making more top-level rugby sides by the next World Cup.
Strange to mention that, because there's only one thing that will do that, and I'm convinced of this. It's basically an improved system of what we've already got. So your Six Nations, and then your other Six Nations, which you actually treat as an equal, and then you play each other in the autumns and the spring. I don't think we need a tournament.
And a greater revenue share, so there's a link between Six Nations and the Rugby Europe Championship, and some of the TV money for the Six Nations does get siphoned off and invested in developing
because
the other nations.
At some point, the tables will flip, and then the Six Nations will want money from the other competition.
And also, the BBC is the BBC. They could put, because they're a licence fee funding thing, they could put these matches on TV.
I would as an ardent critic of the BBC,
as am I
would question the public. What do you call it? The public service they'd be providing by showing me Georgia versus Russia. To be honest,
love it.
I mean, I'd love it, but I'd still question it.
Well, on the red button then. Anyway,
but just on that, and all those points that you've made, Tim, are absolutely valid. And so I'm now looking at the high level bullet points from the San Francisco Calendar Agreement, as it was called, and I think most of them hit it without this Nations League. So optimized calendar for both hemispheres, tick. 39% increase in tier one versus tier two fixtures, tick. Tier one tours to Pacific Islands, Japan, Canada, USA, Georgia, Romania, tick. Player welfare, which is not something we've discussed now, but
unsure of is the answer to that.
Well they're making efforts.
As in player welfare to make sure the best players are not being burnt out, so you get the best players in the right fixtures.
I haven't seen anything which suggests that might actually be the case, though.
Well, no, but that is one of the kind of key objectives of the agreement.
Okay, fine.
Whether they've achieved that or not. But a lot of these things, they're ticking.
But this doesn't come into effect until after... So the calendar agreement doesn't come into effect until after the 2019 World Cup. So we couldn't have seen any of the impacts of it yet.
Yeah, fine.
But everything set out there seems to be a benefit. I just don't see what additional benefit. I think
good for Argentina,
the Nations League.
Good for Australia. Good for... That's the way I would summarise it, is great for Southern Hemisphere nations that aren't filling stadiums, aren't making money.
I don't know, Tim.
Argentina, every game I've seen in the Rugby Championship, they have a packed stadium.
Small stadium.
If you want to talk about small stadium, New Zealand. I don't know. I just don't see the need for a table or a competition. I 100% think they need to play a wider range of teams.
Yeah, but the biggest issue is what could happen is November. Oh, look, England have been drawn in a pool with Scotland.
Yeah,
great.
Actually.
No. I want to play Scotland in February, never November.
I'm going to back you up here, which is we don't really need to see that. And also, I wouldn't be surprised if it's to the detriment of the lower teams. And this will not be the intention. Knowing World Rugby like I do, they are very much in the corner of the developing nations. There's no two ways
Absolutely.
About that. But I don't think that this is going to get the developing nations more tier one games. I just don't see it.
It doesn't sound like it to me. It might get two of them. Two of them each year.
At the moment, the reason that the November tests are again relevant to me, because I went through a period of just not caring what happened in November. You know, Wales play Australia,
and then
three
you came
times.
Up with a hashtag downfall 2018, and now they mean everything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they have for a few years, and it's because I get to see the tier twos in there. I mean, maybe I'm in the minority there. From rugby fans.
That Georgia in the Principality Stadium last November, that was amazing. I loved it.
I want to see all these different jerseys. I want to see all different nations. I'm sure that England have had all three November internationals against the same team. I'm sure they have at some point. If not, they frequently play Australia twice. I mean, it wasn't so long ago. Did they play Australia like five times in 12 months?
Well, Eddie Jones' first year.
Yeah, come off it.
And they'll play South Africa four times
this year. They only play France once a year.
Yeah.
I mean, they play their local rivals less. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So we'll see how that one pans out, but it's there laid out on the table. They're meeting in Sydney this week.
Which is where Pichot is going to put his full proposal.
Yeah, so we'll see if there's any other detail he's adding to the bones there.
Now, there was another announcement from World Rugby
this week
that might have passed you by because of a law clarification.
Oh, yes.
And we're not
awesome.
And I feel so vindicated on this one. Yeah. This is, yes.
So we're not going to go into much detail on this, but it is a point that we've raised a few times looking backwards. Mm-hmm. And it's new law 919, which is lifting in open play, which is effectively, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but it's effectively putting duty of care on the lifter to bring his own teammate down
kick-offs.
Safely.
Yes.
So when it's a single man lift.
The Falau law, as it's known.
Yeah.
What happened to Falau?
Do you remember it was a really
against Ireland.
A really tight game against Ireland in the deciding test, I think? And Israel, Peter O'Mahony jumped, CJ Stander lifted him at a kickoff. Israel Folau, on his own, got as high as Peter O'Mahony being lifted by CJ Stander. Incredible athleticism. Both competed fairly for the ball, because he was being lifted by CJ Stander, Omani sort of pivoted on Stander's hands and ended up landing on his neck, and I think Flower went off on a yellow card, crucial yellow. And at the time, Twitter absolutely roasted me when I think you guys might have backed me up actually, saying this isn't, you know, there's a duty of care here. We can't just be giving yellow cards for playing rugby. And World Rugby appear to agree.
So what they're saying,
they're letting the boys play.
So they're not, for clarity, they're not using the word duty of care. That's just an easy way to explain it.
Yeah.
But they're saying that the lifter, even a one-man lift, the lifter has responsibilities to bring his own teammate back down safely. If he doesn't, it's a free kick to the opposition.
So what the... What happens, right, when the beast is lifting someone?
Well,
they tumble backwards.
Well,
he saves them.
Yeah.
And the puzzle, I mean,
So that is a perfect example of him not wanting to give away a free kick or have his own teammate dropped on his head. Because in both those situations, because the beast has done it twice.
Yeah.
And he saved his own teammate both times.
But
so that would,
know,
be, that would just be play on.
I can see a situation, genuine now, where the beast lifts someone, he's holding him in the air, he pivots on his shorts like he's done in the past. The guy's falling, the referee then blows his whistle in anticipation of the impending disaster, meaning that the beast actually releases the guy because he's already given away the free kick.
Well, then it's on the referee, and it should be a free kick against the referee for blowing
his
whistle.
Point being, hopefully the consequence of this will be less yellow cards like the one for Israel Folau, and... more letting the boys play.
Oh, well, I've got an interesting duty of care story.
Okay.
So I sat down with a good friend of mine who knows things about law and disciplinary procedures. And we were talking...
Brett Kavanagh.
Yeah, good old Brett.
Having a few beers, catching up.
Yeah. So we were having a chat. And one of the cases which we've cited in the past and which confuses us is the Benjamin Fowle case.
Yes.
Because no intent was shown.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That, I said, well, is that a precedent for future cases? And it's not a precedent. That would be counted as an outlier rather than a precedent, because there is no hierarchy of courts, if that makes sense. I bet I'm butchering this explanation. But if you think about it, you know, if a decision goes up the court to the most court and then the court makes a decision, that then is a precedent which comes down.
So just because George Smith takes some biscuits and does an amazing presentation doesn't mean that all similar tackles in the French League or the IRB will be dealt with the same way.
Exactly. It's an outlier.
Well, surely, though, if there is no hierarchy of courts,
yeah,
and we've got a sport and a set of laws which are constantly evolving and constantly being clarified, i.e., the recent clarification of point 19
and interpreted 9.19, slightly differently nation to nation,
then the most recent instance, the most recent decision would set a precedent.
Well, that's a very, very good question, and it's one which I'll remember and ask when I'm
good man
there.
Good.
Again,
watch this space on the World Rugby stuff. Right, I think this will segue us nicely into some actual rugby. Bath Rugby released on Friday, along with their team announcement for Saracens, involving 13 changes to their starting 15 to go to Allianz Park to face the champions. They released an open letter saying, well, they said a few things. One,
they said a lot.
Todd Blackadder's, they said a lot. It took a long time to say what they had to say. That's the way I would put it. Todd Blackadder, a year extension at least. Stuart Hooper, the man to take over.
At some point.
And an emphasis on developing their own academy players, looking at the model that Exeter and Leinster have demonstrated in recent years.
And Sale Sharks, for that matter.
And also developing their own coaches. And on the coaches' front, Toby Booth and Darren Edwards would be leaving at the end of the season.
Okay.
Well, what did you make of the process of the open letter?
As far as I can remember, this is the first time I've seen something which was so transparent in any sport. Mm. I'd never seen anything quite like this before. And it was an explanation of the logic and the inner workings and the strategy behind operating the rugby club and the coaching.
And more than that,
decisions.
The sort of primary values, that like the sort of things you would come up with, the CEO with the... with the board of directors and the actual vision and the mission of the club. So, and they're actually given that to the fans as well. Here's what we're trying to do.
So on that basis, I liked it. I liked a lot of the principles they were trying to lay out in terms of like the homegrown talent and the strategy of allowing someone like Stuart Hooper, who we know from his playing days is an exceptional leader, an exceptional captain, and someone that people listen to, and a great thinker and a great decision maker, letting him, or the ambition to develop him internally and giving the time to do so and the right people around him to do so. And it kind of it made me think, so I'm a Manchester United fan who have got, so United are very much struggling at the moment with managerial decisions, leadership decisions outside the managerial position, and there is absolutely zero transparency about what on earth anyone in that club thinks at any stage. And the only things you get are so politically guarded and caveated that it's all nonsense. So for me, it was really nice and refreshing to see that.
Okay, well, I would agree it is nice and refreshing if I believe they meant it, and I don't think they think they mean it.
Which bit?
All of it, really. So
you don't think Toby Booth's going at the end of the season?
No, he's definitely staying. So in terms of the values and the structure, okay, it is very easy to say we're going to develop our academy lads, but you've got to do it. It's very easy to say we're going to develop our coaches, but you've got to do it. So the first problem here is this is a strategy being executed by a guy that has owned the club and his friend who's also the CEO and might be a very good CEO, I don't know. And they've been in position for, what, 7 or 8 years now? After they took over from the Brown Swords? So,
yeah, something
you know,
like that.
You've got the same people at the top and they've shown a certain predilection to a way of operating which does not in any way reflect what is in that letter.
Well, I think that might be what's being addressed.
Okay.
Because they haven't won anything. They've had all this money, they've bought all these superstars, these Galacticos, and they've not won anything. And the Bath, when I used to live in Bath and when I went to university in Bath, they had an unbelievable academy.
Yeah.
I used to go and watch my brother was playing for the under-21s and I used to go and watch games, and the number of guys that would come through from under-19s, under-21s, first team, England, so many players.
I mean,
doesn't happen. When was the last one of those that happened?
Yeah.
But Bath imported London Irish's academy pretty much.
Yes. And you know, and also, the coach that brought that academy through to seniors, which is Toby Booth, right? So I get that. But I'd be interested to know what the conversation was 8 years ago when Bruce Craig took over. And if the conversation was, we're going to develop our own coaches and our own academy players, because I can't imagine it sitting down and saying, we're going to steal everyone else's academy players. It would have been the same. It'd been the same sort of conversation.
And not knowing the detail, but from looking at the outside in, I think their ultimate goal has been success at whatever cost.
Yes.
And so we're just buying talent rather than focusing. So this should see a shift away from
it's a balance, because they have said we want world-class players
if they
grow our own ones.
Yeah, if they mean it, right, more power to them, great. I just think they're 7 or 8 years into a project and I haven't seen any evidence of these guys being the guys to do that. And that goes for... That even goes to... You know, they do have a good academy now. You know, it does exist and they do bring guys through. But it doesn't stop them signing loads of players mid-season. And I believe that they're looking for cover at the moment for was it one of the outside backs? Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
Centre.
Thank you. Yeah. So they continue to behave in that way. Now Stuart Hooper's another one. I've only ever heard glowing references about Stuart Hooper. Mm. In fact, it's a direct quote from a pundit friend of yours, Tim. An outstanding man.
He is
utmost integrity.
He is a pretty special human being.
Yeah.
Is what I seem to just hear in general.
Yeah, that's pretty much what all... But, I mean, there are plenty of outstanding human beings.
Todd Blackadder's an outstanding human being.
Yeah, you can make that argument. I mean, you can make an argument for outstanding human beings from outside of the rugby sphere. But are they going to make great directors of rugby or coaches? And it depends what job they're going to give Stuart Hooper. Because he's general manager now. Before he was...
And he'll have Todd Blackadder's role of head of rugby, basically.
Yeah, but like, what does that mean? Is that tracksuit on? Is that David Humphreys head of rugby? Is that
I think that's a more overarching setting the vision and bringing in the right people to execute it.
Yeah.
So it's one to watch, but they made 13 changes, did Bath, which got a lot of criticism.
Yeah, it's a joke. Lot. Absolute joke. When they went to Northampton, they were very, very competitive up front. I think they've got a really good loose head in Nathan Carr. In fact, I actually think that their pack is pretty decent. And if you look at their first game against Bristol, which was a loss, then they had a draw, then they had a win, then they had a win, and they were going in the right direction. Felt like they just threw in the towel before they even showed up at Mainz.
Do you know what their next three games are?
Exeter, Toulouse.
Exeter at home on Friday.
Yep.
Toulouse.
Huh?
And then Wasps.
Cool. But I just kind of think, you know, that's who you've got to go and play. Try and win it all. You're Bath.
What, you would have played their first choice team in all of those games, in all the first 8 weeks of the season?
I would play my most competitive team against all of those teams, yes.
All 8 weeks?
Yep, all 8 weeks. Now, I'm not saying that the most competitive team is the same team every week, but it's the team that I think would have the most chance of winning every week, because that is my job as a director of rugby or someone who runs a rugby club.
Now, I had a look at this and I did a little bit of totting up. Saracens, in total, from one game to the next, if you add up all the changes to their starting 15, mm-hmm. between matches over the first five rounds, they made 20 interchanges.
Okay.
So from one game to the next, over five games, they've changed 20 of their starting 15.
Sure.
So, like, on average, four a game.
Okay. Yeah.
Bath made 13 changes in that one game between week four and week five.
Yeah.
Overall, 22 over the first five
weeks. Sorry, what were Saracens?
20.
Okay.
So, pretty similar. And when you look at the total number of players used, Bath are, I think, three more. And that's with the backdrop of Bath having some key areas where they've got injury. So
yeah.
they haven't had the ability to drop centres or wingers.
I really don't disagree with you there. I think rotation is fine, okay, but it's little and often.
I totally agree, but the difference, and that's what Exeter do. That's what Saracens do. That's what established, well performing teams do. It's not what Bath did, because the partnerships haven't been set. They changed their fly half.
I mean, that's ludicrous. Changing
fly
half.
They're not quite sure what the best halfback is. They're not quite sure what the right centre combination is, because they've got an injury. Ali Brew was there last week. They're not quite sure. Joe Cocker and the Singers just started. Who's fullback? Is it Homer? We've got this Atkins guy we quite like. Who's the best second row pair? So they don't know their best team. They're at a different stage in their evolution. So I actually think it was a sensible move from Bath, and I want to defend them for it.
No, I just can't buy it. I mean, I think we know their strongest team, and their strongest team
will be the one that plays on Friday night against Exeter.
Yeah, well, something that looks like the one they played against Bristol, I'd say, with Jamie Roberts smashing it up the middle. Yep. That's what
13 guys rested coming back in.
But I just don't think it's a good.
Jamie Roberts is unavailable, isn't
and
he?
I'll tell you what else it does, right? Is those guys who get rotated in, it gives them a bad rep. Because you can have four guys get rotated in and do a real good job in a first-team pack and a first-team back line. But when you rotate 13 all together, you know, there's just too much quality gone. And then the guy who might have done great in the first team might not do great in a second team.
I suppose there is a question. There's always a how many's too many.
Yeah. And that's what I'd say. Like, even Saracen suffered. Like, that was enforced. But they went through a phase when they lost five in a row. And you look at the Saracen team and think, God, they usually can handle one or two. And they can't, and that's the reason they can, because they do give them exposure at first team level. I say first team level, they're all first teamers, but starting 15 level.
Yeah, I hear you. Bristol did the same thing at Saracens, they changed nine when they went there.
So I wouldn't do it. I don't mind that they did it.
Yeah.
Because it's a recognition that with the players available, and they're missing their first two, well, their first three. Centres.
Yeah, I think
Willison, Roberts and Jonathan Joseph all out.
I think you do two things. You can buy depth or you can build depth. And that is something which Bath have not successfully done. And that's exactly what the best teams do. They build it by giving the guys bits of experience.
And that feeds back to their main vision.
Mm.
I don't mind it too much, but There we go. Well, the one thing it did do is it meant a lot of people got in touch with us and said, see, it's not just the Pro 14. See, you give the Pro 14 loads of stick for players not playing. There is a big difference, and I'll just remind you of that stat again. Johnny Sexton has played 7 Pro 14 games in 2 years.
Well, can I just say, it sort of backs up our argument about the Pro 14, because Bath made 13 changes, and they were rubbish. So, like, if they're all making 13 changes and they're all rubbish, that kind of works. That said, we should talk about what I consider the best game of the weekend by a country mile.
Would it be Edinburgh 31, Treviso 30?
Oh, my word, it was dynamite.
Did you say Treviso? No, Benetton, isn't it? Sorry,
it's Benetton. Benetton, yeah.
Yeah.
What a good game. I mean, genuinely, some of the best strike moves I have seen in a game of rugby for God knows how long. There's one Edinburgh try in the corner. It's so good that I had to rewind it, record it on my phone, and send it to the Didsbury Talk H rugby group. That's how good it was. So yeah, I mean, give the Pro 12 as much stick as you want, but that league is getting better and better by the week.
Well, it's getting better and better, and on one thing alone, you could argue it's better than it's certainly more competitive than the Premiership. Because the Premiership has 2 unbeaten teams,
yep,
and the Pro 14 doesn't have any unbeaten teams after only 5 games. Yeah,
yeah. You've always got to say that with a pinch of salt, though, haven't you? Actually, there was one unbeaten team last week, wasn't there? Ulster. How do they get on this week?
Well, it's safe to say they have been well and truly beaten.
Did
now.
They save up all of their beatings for one game? It's quite smart, isn't it?
In their first 3 wins and their draw, they took a hell of a beating in each one of those, because they only in the last second came back to go ahead or come level in each one of those games. So all of their luck well and truly ran out.
Do you think this is the game where it was just making up for these wins?
There's an element, and the wins had taken their toll because there were so many injuries.
It's like fire prevention in a forest, isn't it? So like you. So you're constantly trying to get rid of all like the dead, you know, dead wood so it doesn't burn. But actually what happens is you build up the dead wood over years and years and years, and all of a sudden you have a massive fire. Instead of having loads of little ones, you have a huge one. And that's effectively what happened.
Trying to eliminate all forest fires.
Yes.
Means that when one does strike, it's big.
But now is what's left embers and scorched earth?
Well,
or is there's still plenty there?
Well, there is a correlation. Do you know that Ulster have lost 100% of their games where Will Addison didn't play?
Wow!
Absolutely, yeah.
Take that to the bank.
One other Irish province. One moment, I want to bring up. Did you see the Connacht red card Robertson?
Oh, did he get a red card? Carded for that?
Got a red card for a start on Josh van der Fleer. Very quick take. What do you think?
100% and ban him for a long time.
Yeah.
How long?
6 weeks.
Okay.
Eight weeks.
I don't know. I don't know what the minimum sanction is. It looked like. So you don't take into intent into account determining whether it's yellow or red. You do when you're determining the sanction. He looked down and he stood on his head neck area.
It's about as bad as I've seen for a long time.
Well, it wasn't. He didn't stamp. If you take the force into account, wasn't there a lot of force?
It wasn't that much force, but
it was a half-hearted stamp. If you're going to get red-carded and banned for a long time.
It should be a mid-level. Yeah. Whatever the mid-level, if that's 6 to 8 weeks, that seems right.
6 to 8 weeks?
There are a lot of people on Twitter saying the guy should never play again. No. It was like, come on. Yeah.
Half-hearted stamp.
It was stupid.
It's so stupid.
He'll take his medicine. Yeah.
So stupid.
But he didn't stamp on him.
He
pressed his boot on his head. He did. It was a stupid thing to do.
I've got a ton of sympathy for people that get into trouble. You know, they get into a ruck or something and they slip and the shoulder hits a head and, you know, 4 weeks here, 4 weeks there. Ton of sympathy for those guys. I think if you're looking at a guy's head and you stamp on... I'm not just saying this to be, you know, some high and mighty pious person.
Yeah, you are.
But I don't think I could stand on someone's head.
Put this on Twitter, you'll get loads of retweets,
yeah.
Jay.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I could stand on someone's head in the same way I couldn't put my fingers in someone's eyes.
Yes.
Ooh, you know, yeah. I just couldn't do it. And if he can do it,
I miss a bit of shoe pie in a ruck. I honestly think that's less dangerous than the neck rolls and stuff that people are allowed to do. Well, not neck rolls, but the body rolls that people are allowed to do, and the contortion that somebody's going to. I think actually, and what I would say about this, it's not a mitigated circumstance. It's not me saying that Robertson McCoy Ward didn't do something really bad that he shouldn't get banned for. It was a red card. He should get banned.
Give him 12 weeks.
A mid-level. I don't think 12 weeks. I don't know what the top end and mid end is, but I'd go mid-level because he didn't hit him with a load of force anyway. But my point being,
so it's like a half
Josh van der Vlier was. Knew what he was doing when he was holding his leg in the ruck for a long period of time. And there's an element where sometimes I go, I like a bit of self-policing, not stamping someone on the head.
Ruck justice.
But a bit of ruck justice, and I miss a good bit of shoe pie.
There is honour among thieves, isn't there?
Yes, and, there is.
You know, I don't really have a problem. In fact, we used to love it after like a youth team game where you took your tops off and you just had
all the stud marks.
It was
love
so
it.
Cool. Right.
That turned into shark bite by the time you had the swimming lesson in school with the girls.
Oh, yeah. But, like, then I remember a game distinctly, and I just saw one of my teammates' ankles getting stamped on repeatedly. I thought, well, hang on. This is something quite different now.
Yes.
And the self-policing, unfortunately, lends itself to absolute morons. And if Robinson McCoy wants to stand on someone's head, he can. But I would give him 12 weeks and a good talking to.
Yeah. But Josh van der Vlier deserved a little bit of ruck justice of some description.
Yeah, I mean...
He needs
some justice.
Not that.
And I wonder if there's something... I mean, by the way, can we just point out, right, the most moral, high-minded person in all of rugby, David Pocock, choked out Michael Leach.
With, yes.
You know, I would have given him a year.
Yeah, because of the irony of his...
Of course, they couldn't get him to bloody disciplinary because he's tied up to a tree somewhere. But, you know, I'd give him a year for choking someone out because that is bad.
Yeah.
Where else do we want to go? Shall we talk about another brilliant game this weekend in the Gallagher Premiership?
Leicester South. Oh, no, not that one.
No. It was amazing just how much the BT Sport crew hated that game.
Yep.
Everyone, they were so down on it. And it wasn't a great
game.
Well,
did they show it? You tell me if they show it. I don't think that they do. But three Leicester fans there.
Okay.
Three Leicester fans?
Yeah.
Nick, Ben and Nick's, Austin.
Yeah, three Leicester fans, I would say.
Three...
Not that... And I want to stress, they did not sound like Leicester
three fans. Three people who have connections to either the city of Leicester or Leicester Tigers Rugby
Club. Or on the board of Leicester Tigers Rugby Club.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
certainly,
yeah, that
certainly,
one. Yeah,
but that's
yeah.
not hidden.
No, it's absolutely not. And they actually didn't show it in commentary at all. I just thought it was an interesting thing.
Yeah. I think, much like a dad who is a... Who gives his son on the team, if he's the dad as the coach of a team, gives his son extra hard time. I think in the case of Austin, he's not doing it for the sake of it, but he is actually tough on Leicester.
Yeah. Well, he was very, very tough on Lima Sapawanga. Was it Lima Sapawanga?
On Friday night.
Yeah. Bowden Barrett wouldn't do that.
Oh, what a beautiful moment.
Whoops.
Oh, it was great. It was a great moment.
He was also tough on Craig Maxwell Keys.
Oh, we need to talk about the reffing this weekend.
Oh, well, on both Friday night and
Sunday. More Friday night than Sunday.
Oh, okay. So, Carl Dixon.
Yeah.
At Kingston Park.
A very unique way of reffing.
Okay.
Well, you basically don't... You give decisions a very blasé way and you wait for intervention from up above. I quite like it.
For tries, specifically.
Yeah.
So that he gave three decisions for tries that weren't all... I think it was two disallowed without any thought and then one that was given. And then as he was like walking away, the team was like...
Carl?
Carl, it's John. John? Yeah. like, who else is it going to be?
Yeah.
Carl, it's John. Yeah. I think you better have a look at this. Yeah.
Is this insurance again? You've had a claim. It was a case of like, Carl Dixon would look at the try and go, yeah, go and have it, and then walk away. It just seemed like he was relying on the TMO an awful lot, which is fine because he's there.
But without specifically going to the TMO.
Yeah, yeah, didn't ask the TMO for anything.
Hoping the TMO would...
TMO got the Le Bourgeois try wrong. That was a try. And
because it was a knock-on, then he regathered.
But he regathered, that's fine. But that could yet cost me in fantasy rugby draft.
Oh, God, that's what he was thinking. I thought the worst one to miss was the foot in touch. Because that guy was so in touch, it was ridiculous.
Which one?
The last one.
In the corner.
Yeah. The Bassett try. No.
It wasn't the Bassett try.
It was Tom Penny.
Tom Penny.
Yeah, the Bassett try, it's like he didn't even score. Yeah. So they put the ball down, they dotted it down. No reaction from anyone. Not even Bassett celebrated. They all walked off.
Yeah, and Carl, right, 22.
Yeah, 22. Oh, Carl is a try. Oh, sorry, try. Most low-key try I've ever seen.
But let's talk about the end of that game.
Yes.
So firstly, he gave a penalty to Wasps.
Yeah.
And we had this conversation about what do you do at the end of games when you have a penalty and the clock's not going to run dead. What do you do?
Yeah, you can't use your minute to run it dead.
So Wasps thought the minute was going to run it dead. Or the 90 seconds, I think the law is, was going to have run it dead.
Oh, right, yeah, the kick.
So they opted for posts, at which point Carl Dixon said, what was the time when I gave the penalty? And I don't know if the law is, it's 90 seconds from when you award the penalty or 90 seconds from when you opt to go for
sticks. I would imagine
sticks.
It's opt.
I would have thought so, but Carl Dixon took 60 seconds from the point at which he awarded the penalty. So it would then be restarted, but Wasps were then committed to kicking. Now, if that were the case, I would have made sure I kicked the leather off it, give it to Elliot Daly so it goes dead. Instead, it dropped in field and Gonover could run it out without having to take a dropout.
Yeah. I didn't really pick up on that.
And then Gonover didn't even fake to touch the ball down.
Exactly. And then what followed was a 4-minute attack by Newcastle and they inched closer and closer and closer. And it looked to me like there were three absolute
offsides.
Guaranteed penalties to Newcastle.
So even more interesting was when Newcastle first started running out from their own 22, he gave two penalties to Newcastle when they were just outside their 22 and then just inside
That's
their
right.
own 10-metre line.
That's
so
right.
he gave two easy penalties that were nowhere near kickable, that were real soft penalties. But then as soon as they got into a kickable position, he didn't give them anything until they eventually knocked on.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I watched so much rugby this weekend that's all kind of phased into one. But yeah, you're right. Because I think I said to you that I felt like at the end of the game, like he really bottled that. That if that if that wasn't a game winning decision, then he would have given that penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And he'd given two much softer ones than the three that he didn't give in the same passage of play.
Yeah.
Just because they were non-kickable positions.
It was interesting. It's a tough job. It's a really tough job.
I don't blame Carl Dixon. I mean, I do think he would have acted differently. But actually, the real problem here was Newcastle allowed Wasps to score more points. You know, if it comes down to Carl Dixon, it ultimately comes down to you.
That is a very, very good point. The single point of failure is very easy to blame.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you've got to look further than that, and you've got to. It is difficult to analyse across a full 80-minute game. How many times did Newcastle force silly turnovers? How many times did they take the ball a little bit too flat, a little bit too much pace, so they forced a knock on?
Completely agree.
With little pressure on them.
And can I just reiterate as well how well Johnny Williams played? I thought he was brilliant, and I just wish he played somewhere closer to here than Newcastle.
So
how many clubs are closer to here?
I don't know, but like somewhere we could easily watch him because he's a great player to watch.
What was I going to say then? Oh yeah, why didn't Toby Flood drop back in the pocket at any point as well? I don't understand why he didn't have a crack at a drop goal. Anyway,
I think was he not a bit too far out by that point?
He could have had a crack.
They were just outside the 22.
Yeah, hoping to get closer, but.
Anyway.
So, no, the game that I wanted to talk about, which, admittedly, I've only seen the extended highlights, but it was a hell of a game. 40-45.
Amazing, isn't it?
85-point thriller at Ashton Gate, with Bristol being edged out to Northampton Saints.
Getting 2 points, though.
Two hook points will be very, very important come the end of the season. It was a tremendous game.
Can I just say on Fantasy Rugby Draft, I signed. You can go and look at our Facebook page, facebook.com/eggchasers, and I did a very comprehensive pre-season roundup of Bristol. And in our Fantasy Rugby Draft, I signed the Bristol front row thinking, I'm on here. Harry Thacker.
You never thought that. You never thought that.
Go and have a look at the video.
I remember the conversations.
And then I signed them. As my Fantasy Rugby Draft front row, thinking, Harry Thacker, I am in the points here. And then they didn't do very well for the first few weeks in Fantasy Rugby Draft.
Tell you what.
And I dropped them and picked them up and they get 30-odd points.
You want to talk about bad cap
management.
Bad cap management. I mean, I'm not going to give them... Yeah, I'm going to give them some stick. Forget it. You've got Tom Youngs. Well, no, yes. Tom Youngs as hooker. His backup is somewhere on 300k plus in Australia, right?
Well, in in South Africa, but not playing for Australia.
Yeah,
because he's picked up a knock.
He's not in your facility.
Yeah,
right.
He's thousands of miles.
Two men in their thirties as well.
Two men in their thirties. Meanwhile, you got Thacker and McGuigan, who you could probably get for a lot cheaper, who are a lot younger and are tearing up trees.
Yeah.
Oh, what are you thinking, Leicester Tigers? What are you thinking?
So yeah, Bristol, Northampton. Now again, there's a lot of people complaining about the Andy Irwin try disallowed.
Yes.
Which was a try, in my opinion. Because I don't believe he was held. He should have been entitled to get up and carry on. But the single point of failure argument, that unfortunately for a Bristol fan did not lose the game. And they had multiple opportunities to get points on the board at other times.
Yes, agreed.
Although I will say, Sheedy came in for Madigan. They're both playing pretty well. It doesn't help losing your starting fly half just before kickoff or not long before kickoff. In the same way as Sale Sharks found out with three tries to one in the Leicester game.
Yeah.
But no one could kick.
Yes.
Well, to be fair, Willcliffe is a good kicker. He just had an off day.
He did. He had a Beauden Barrett day. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
No. On Sale.
Let's come Sale later.
No. All I'm saying is on that, just kicker point, people with far less experience and expertise, just regular fans, people like us, were saying, I think it's a bit worrying to put all your eggs in the AJ McGinty basket.
Oh,
well, it's kind of not, though, is it?
One fly half, one goal kicker.
Yeah, but I mean, if Steenson gets injured for Exeter, right?
Joe Simmons.
Yeah, but then all your eggs are in the Joe Simmons basket. You've got to remember, Sale have O'Connor.
But that's the second basket.
That's the second basket.
Yeah. But they have O'Connor too, right? And then also they've got Kieran Wilkinson and so on and so forth. I would say it was just unlucky that it happened on that day. If he wasn't available, they would have come up with something else. And actually, Sam James did fine at 10. Sam James wasn't the problem.
You're right. Kicking was the problem. And if they had Faf, they'd have a better goal kicker.
Yeah.
Let's talk about
the other game. There's nothing to talk about the Sale Leicester game.
It's the only other point from the Bristol game. So the Morahan try was sensational. The crossfield kick.
Oh, yeah.
And Nairavoro, his try.
Running over Stephen Luatua.
Like he wasn't there at all. That's frightening. That's a glimpse of what
Nairavoro,
he can do.
He just runs in a straight line. No step, nothing.
His legs.
Why would you need to?
His legs are so big and moving so fast that Luatua didn't slow him down a tiny bit.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to find right. Yeah, the one thing I would say about Bristol, lots of things I'd say about Bristol. First of all, they're not getting relegated. I'm going to call it right now. There is no hope this team is getting relegated.
Well, you're about 5 weeks behind me and Phil.
Yeah,
but yeah, glad you're on board.
But like, it's just not even close.
I think it'll be close. I don't.
Oh, I don't. I mean,
I predicted 10th for
them. They're doing well now. No, it's going to be higher than that. If they're doing well now, imagine what they're going to do during the international windows. I mean, they're only going to get better. They're only going to get more confident. And scoring points. I mean, that's pretty difficult in the Premiership, but they have no problems with it whatsoever.
Yep.
Yeah, that is the biggest positive for Bristol.
Yeah, so pretty good. The other thing, though, they are very, very overweight with foreign players. I mean, maybe that's what they have to do, but their team is massively skewed towards foreign players. Or maybe I'm being unfair. But you tell me.
Morahan, Luatua.
Well, just going from the front.
Pietau, PC. Madigan, Afoa.
Chris.
Latta,
Chris
Luatua.
Chris Louie.
George Smith, Jack Lamb.
Joe Latta.
I mean, yeah.
Have you seen Joe Latta's hair, by the way?
Sturzaker, Kirchner's there.
Right, have you seen Joe Latta's hair?
Yes, I have.
What's going on there? That's got to be a drink. That's got to be a bet, hasn't it?
It's not good. It's not good.
It's left it's all short back and sides except for one patch at the back.
I'm assuming it's a dare, but I'm not entirely sure.
Mm.
Maybe he's cultivating it for potential advertising space. Mm. He's going to get someone to shave cornerstone into the back
of
his head.
One, two, three. Is it three English players that they fielded in their first 15?
Let's have a look.
Four, maybe? Is Ed Holmes English?
Hurrell.
He's the one that came from Exeter, isn't he?
Hurrell, Sheedy, Euron, Thacker, Ed Holmes.
Five.
Five. Five in the start in 15.
Sheedy not Welsh, no?
Honest answer is I don't know.
Don't worry. Point taken, but what's interesting is that, but there are, again, there are stages with this. And Bristol, if they came up like they did last time, going, we're going to have loads of young guys, loads of local lads, they'll get humped and go back down.
Yeah.
So they're fulfilling a role now.
Yeah.
And hope they will change that over time. And Pat Lamb has made that part of his process. But here's another one. Mm-hmm. Gloucester have done the same thing. They've got, how was it put in the, was it in one newspaper or was it, I can't remember where I saw it, but they put the Biltong bunch or something like that.
Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
But yeah, but anyway, they've signed seven South Africans because they want success now. And they don't want to wait.
And you couldn't.
And you know, who else did that? Saracens. I mean, when they got good.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. It's straight, the Saracens model. That's what they did initially when Brendan Venter first came in.
And Exeter probably, so when they first moved to the Premiership, there was very, very little homegrown talent. And they have moved more and more in and developed their academy more and more. And now they're in a position, a very envious position, where they've got more homegrown talent than others.
It's a tough one because I kind of think it's a lovely story, but most of these guys are not exactly Bristolian. I'll tell you the other thing as well. We had this conversation when we first heard that Charles Pietau had moved. You know, 700k, that's a lot for a fullback.
But yeah, that, by the way, they're doing well without him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, my point on this was he's worth 700k, just not to them. You know, he's probably worth 700k to Wasps or 700k to Saracens. He'd be tearing up trees. Well, no, I was wrong, because I think when he comes into that team, he's going to be worth every penny.
Yeah.
My word.
I think so. The real shame, though, is he'll be coming in when the weather's... So a day like Saturday would be perfect for Pietau. When the grounds are firm and fast and when the weather's good, he's the kind of guy you want.
I tell you what, you do not want to see Bristol show up to your place if you've got a plastic pitch. They're the last people they want to see.
Right, here's one, just a little interlude. Okay, I was thinking about this because the Ryder Cup's been on this weekend.
It has.
So I thought if you were coming up with like a Ryder Cup from Europe, goal kickers...
Oh, okay.
Like, so just dead-eye goal kickers. I think it's the closest element of rugby to golf. It's close, motor skill, goal kicking. We've got to pick our 12 people. So obviously you can go Sexton, Halfpenny, Farrell, Bigger, Laidlaw, straight off the bat.
Sorry, and what are they playing? Are the kickers playing golf or are they playing...
Just doing goal kicking. So if you had like a rest of the world, Europe v rest of the world, let's say, and you had to pick 12 goal kickers to in a goal kicking
shootout.
Sexton, Halfpenny, Farrell, Bigger, Laidlaw, and Machinot is the first six.
Right.
And then I've got, see what you think, Ramos from Toulouse. Pretty dead eye. Cooney from Ulster.
How did you come up from Ramos from Toulouse, by the way? I've never even heard of the guy.
He was one of the top point scorers in the top 14 last
year.
There
you go. Never.
Do you know who the top scorer in the Pro 14 was last year?
Oh, hang on.
Top 14, sorry.
No, let me guess. The way you're speaking about it has to be someone... That we'd know.
It's someone that we would know, definitely.
So it's going to be Ryan Lamb.
No.
Oh.
Ben Botica.
Is it?
Really? He was also the player of the season.
What? What?
Playing for relegated Oyonnax.
I thought he played for Montpellier.
Last year he played for
He's moved again.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gone to... Is it Clermont?
I don't know. He gets around. Anyway, so my 12.
You sound a big deal,
so
yeah.
So those six. Parra, Ramos, Cooney, Priestland, Weir... Oh, no, Ford. Oh,
Cooney has to be in there.
Yeah, he does. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Cliff? 6, 7, 8. Ford, Russell, Canner. Oh, Vadim Kovalash.
Hey!
So I will add one. Because yeah, go on. So the Pro 14 very handily...
Angus O'Brien.
Do. I'm just looking at...
He was top scorer 2 years ago.
I'm just looking at what year this is, actually. It doesn't give a year on this. This is presumably the latest one. So they Pro 14 give the Golden Boot Award every year.
Oh, do they?
Which is not the top kicker.
I know.
It's percentage.
The most accurate kicker.
Ah.
And assuming that this is last
year's... Chris Patterson would have won that all the time with his little...
Yeah.
Oh, it's in front of the sticks. I'll have this one.
It's not in front of the sticks. What's the name? Dan Parks.
Dan Parks.
Dan Parks, you take it. Sam Davies of Ospreys, 88% kick success.
Has he been playing recently?
So this is last. I'm assuming this is last year. It doesn't actually give a date on
interesting.
It. But yeah, I wouldn't have picked him to be the most accurate kicker.
No, I wouldn't. Well,
so the other games, just quickly mention. So Exeter comfortably beat Worcester.
Yes.
By less points than I was expecting, but it was a 5-point win. The big talking point, I guess, from that is Big Dave Ewers is back.
Very much so.
Big Dave.
Two tries. Big Dave, 125 kg of Zimbabwean beef. And if... So Eddie Jones has got this kind of 6/2nd row berth, which seemingly has to be someone not English born.
Yeah.
Because he's got Brad Shields, he's got Michael Rhodes, he's had Armand, he's had Mike Williams in that squad. Dave Ewers fits that mould so perfectly because he's so strong. I guess the only problem is because he's 125 kg, he's not as much of a line-out option as those other ones. So, but yeah, good to see him back.
Yeah, definitely.
He's playing too well to be picked for England, frankly.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
And the other game, Gloucester, who we thought had had a good start to the seasons, hosting Harlequins, who we know have had a bad start to the season, and Quins came away with a win. And despite in that... So again, watching the extended
Gloucester's
highlights...
Gloucester's here next year,
So
it basically tells you everything you need to know about these two teams, right? So in the famous words of the American football coach, they are who we thought they were. Harlequins are a bad team who get good results, and Gloucester are as flaky as they've always been. Two losses on the bounce now, you know, 1-3, lost 2.
Well, so
the Saracens defeat, I mean, they got royally beaten.
They got hammered, didn't they?
And they haven't got the Bath excuse of making 13 changes.
No.
Yeah. And then they just didn't recover well at all to get beaten by a Harlequins team, who I thought they'd comfortably beat, frankly.
I suppose on that front, from Bath's point of view, let's just take for an assumption at the moment that Bath would have sent their strongest team and still lost.
Yeah, they've
still got that little mental thing in their mind. Yeah, but we haven't played them. Whereas Gloucester sent their A team in, got battered.
Do you know what? They might have been better if they sent their A team in. they did get hammered. God, Saracens are
at home to Quins will be a hammer blow.
Do you know what? I wonder if Saracens are going to get a slightly easier ride than they should. Because everyone shows up there with a second team. Like we accidentally give them the league.
Yeah, well, because it used to be, certainly in football, it used to be the historic thing of whoever the top team in the league are, everyone turns up. Everyone will play their best game against Chelsea away or United away or Arsenal away, whatever it is. So their home game, the one that they should win, actually ends up being the hardest game.
Yes.
Whereas Saracens, they've gone that far that people just don't even bother anymore.
You just don't even show up.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It's not even worth it.
Yeah.
But Quins, I was impressed to see the bit. So the first 15 minutes, it was all Gloucester. And then Quins' defensive pressure forced... It was a fired pass from Cipriani to Banahan, who fumbled it, and Nathan Earle picked it up and goes 60 yards to score. Uh-huh. And it came from the Quins' defensive pressure and stopping Gloucester from getting over that gain line. And it's... Now, I'm not completely turned around. I'm not being hysterical and reactionary to one semi-decent Quins' performance. But it did show kind of the start of the Gustard regime. And it was interesting hearing Marler in his multiple interviews in the week, because obviously he was asked about Gustard coming in. And he was very much, look, it's a complete change. It's new systems, new processes, new people. It is going to take time, but it will come good. And I just think that might be a glimpse on the route of Quins changing that kind of flaky defensive mentality.
Know, there's... There's a few teams in the NFL. I think the NFL is important because there's no promotion relegation, so they're always the same teams. Mm-hmm. And there's just a baked-in DNA. So the Ravens always play good defense. The Browns are always bad. You know, the Steelers are always good. Well, not this year. But, you know, we sort of know before we even start the season. And then occasionally, you know, someone does something different. I quite often think that some of the DNA of these teams is exactly what it is. Gloucester are flaky and Quins just... they're just wins.
Look what happened to Leicester Tigers when they tried to change from their DNA. Yeah. As they did, they tried to play not a power forward-oriented game. They tried to play an all-court type of rugby, and the wheels have come off.
Yeah. Mm. Sorry, just go back to the Edinburgh game, right? Watch that Edinburgh game, because it actually looks like it's be, like Edinburgh are being coached by Aaron Major, not Richard Cockerell, which is the irony of the whole thing. Yeah, you're right about Leicester, though. You know, they lost their identity. So,
but there's something about that, isn't there? Like Exeter, if they suddenly started signing a load of big superstars on huge money.
Oh, who would be the least Exeter signing?
Sopwanga.
No, you got work. No.
Quade Cooper.
Quade Cooper. That's a perfect.
Yeah, that's a.
They bring
even
in Quade
one.
Cooper. They bring in Israel Folau.
Oh, please.
And Curtly Beale.
Curtly Beale. Lovely, lovely assist for that South African try.
23
for Deante.
After 23 seconds to throw a double miss on your own line. What was he thinking?
Do you know what, though? A very unexpected signing would be. I was about to joke and say Tom James, but they already signed him. And they already signed Ollie Cuthbert. And he's doing fine. Alex Cuthbert, sorry. And he's doing absolutely fine. So maybe their culture is so overpowering they can change anyone into a great player.
Maybe.
We'll see. Yeah, Cuthbert's a good test.
But that DNA and identity, I think that's really important. And I love that about rugby, that the history, these clubs, yes, the professional era is only 20 some years old, but for like this game is 150 years old or more.
Mm.
And there are traditions and there are feelings and again, it's one of the reasons I think Gatland has done a brilliant job with Wales, but I think it's one of the reasons why some people actually give him a bit of stick until he started opening up, because Wales to me was always
traditionally,
you know, flair players, incredible players with unbelievable skill and steps and all of that. And France, horrible when they go away from playing offloading, quick, attacking rugby.
France, yeah, we're simpatico on that one. Wales, the DNA for Wales in my memory has just been terrible. Like, honestly, just the worst embarrassing team.
When you were
team.
A kid in the 90s.
God, it was bad. Like, it was so, so bad. That's what I think when I think of Wales. Hmm. Anyway, yeah. So I guess it shows as well, doesn't it, how hard it is, like how much you need to change things if you really want to change things. Like you've got to completely gut a club, like Black Monday in Saracens or whatever it was called, when they just fired everyone. Off you go.
Should we just quickly touch on the Rugby Championship scores?
You want to talk about Sale Leicester?
We'll come back to that.
We've spoken about that, haven't we?
Not really, but we don't need to either, is the answer.
Yeah, I think we've said everything that needs to be said. If Sale had a goal kicker, they'd win. Leicester don't look great, but managed to scrape it.
Oh, we've not spoken about Dorian West yet.
No.
Rugby Championship. Do we need to put out an appeal at this point? If anyone can let Argentina know where their set piece has gone, can they please get in touch with us and we'll let them know.
This was a myth-busting game because Beauden Barrett kicked 100% as well.
Yes.
Including a couple from the touchline.
I mean, to the point...
Touchline's always
Argentina's
problem.
Argentina's scrum and line-out got humped. Beauden Barrett was 100% off the tee. I think we need to get the police involved in this.
So
sort of betting scam. What's going on?
Augustin Creevy is the most overrated player on earth. I have said this for God knows how long. If we looked at his win percentage at both club and country, it is minuscule.
The flip side of looking at that is, oh man, New Zealand aren't just an incredible backline. They've got an absolute weapon of a pack as well.
What? Who, New Zealand?
This is their second choice pack in a lot of
they're amazing.
Of cases
they're amazing.
Well. Oh, you know, Shannon Frizzell, the number six.
Oh man,
six,
where did he come
row.
From? So did you know his name a year ago? Really?
Nope. So he's rugby league, isn't he? All?
Well, so his brother
is.
That's right.
And his brother plays rugby league for, I can't remember who it is. The Sharks. Let's say.
Oh, was it South Sydney Troll Hunters or something?
Something like that. Yeah. He is also an Australian Rugby League international and a Welsh Rugby League international.
Because I didn't know that.
Their dad is Welsh. So they're So Wales are apparently eyeing him up.
I knew that bit. I don't believe it, though, to be honest.
Well, they'll be looking at him in the same way, in the same way that Ireland had Billy Burns on their radar.
I mean, it'd have to be a very, very reasonable price, is what I'm saying. Because Wales struggle enough to bring their actual players home without going over and splashing loads of cash on, you know, Sam Burgess-type projects. So, yeah, okay, if they want to, fine, but... You know, someone described them as the Sam Burgess of Welsh rugby. Like Sam Burgess-style enforcer. But he's only like 6 foot. He's not massive.
He plays second row or centre.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
I'm thinking he's 6 foot. I might have wrong.
Well, Shannon is a big boy.
Is he?
Yeah, he's playing 6/2 row for the All Blacks.
Yeah, I guess he's quite big, yeah.
He's going to be fairly handy. So, the fairly routine win for New Zealand. The two finishes from Rico Ioane, sensational. The break, the offload from Sonny Bill for the break for Rico Ioane was just incredible. To tie up three players and just flick round the back.
Sonny Bill back coming back just to demonstrate, or just to basically not put that company that makes age 9 shorts out of business.
Now, you talk about Maratoji being built like an athlete. Sonny Bill.
Yeah. We tweeted a picture of Sonny Bill and Rico Ioane both wearing the same black vest. I'm sure it was the same size, but it fit them slightly differently.
Slightly different, yeah. Slightly different.
Sonny Bill is something else.
Yeah.
You've stood like a metre away from him. What's he like?
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
It's bizarre. It was bizarre.
And Jerome Kano, I imagine, was pretty...
Jerome Kano is a different species to us. I don't know what he is, but he is a frightening looking man. Actually, where is he? Is he still involved in All Blacks?
Toulouse.
Is he gone?
Gone.
Oh.
He's at Toulouse. He is 35 or 36 now.
You can understand why. Well, Stephen Luatua, by the way, there was some talk today. He's saying he's looking like he's going to extend his stay with Bristol and give up on a potential World Cup spot with New Zealand. When you look at the New Zealand back row and how they're playing, you can understand why a reported $700,000 a year might actually be, do you know what?
Yeah.
Plus, Stephen Luatua, he's had a tough paper round.
Yeah.
He's 26.
He does not look 26. What's the name of Big Brian from Glasgow?
Oh, my. I've met Big Brian. I've shaken hands with him.
Yeah.
He is huge.
But like, he's about 20. He's allegedly about 23.
Yeah, apparently. Like, I met him when he was 21.
Yeah.
I could not believe my eyes. Like, he's just a giant of a man. And, like, not just, you know, some guys are tall. He doesn't look overly muscular because he's just so big. He's all in proportion big. You're like, his hands are like shovels. Like, he looks like a normal-sized person, but just massive.
Scaled up. Just yeah. Scaled up.
Like size 26 feet.
When you do you used to do your own, create your own player on Madden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just like...
Bigger.
Biggest.
But anyway, but I suppose Stephen Luatua has put his head in some ugly places, so, you know.
Yeah,
he's done the work to look like that for 26.
Well, he looks the same age as George Smith when they're stood next to each other.
How long will George Smith go for? Because he's still pretty effective.
Yeah.
He is. Yeah, when the referees let him get away with it, he's effective. Mm. I say let him get away with
when
it.
When they let the boys play.
Don't penalise him.
Yep.
The only other thing to mention, the Australia-South Africa game.
Faffa's ace.
Brilliant start.
Yeah.
And then the second half, the game just died. Just nothing was happening. Knock-ons, reset scrums, lost ball in contact, losing line-outs, losing...
That's amazing.
Do you know what I've thought watching the Rugby Championship? Both from what South Africa and Argentina bring. And Argentina are in England's pool, let's not forget.
Yeah, which is a bit worrying.
You're not going to be able to match New Zealand doing what New Zealand do.
Nope.
But New Zealand do everything, which does make it difficult.
They do, but you're going to have to do something different. You're going to have to do something uniquely you and incredibly well to beat New Zealand.
Yeah.
And you look at Argentina and then you look at South Africa, who England have got to play. Hold on.
No, hang on.
Are England, South Africa and Argentina? No, it's France.
No, France.
France. Sorry. Anyway.
Tonga, USA, Argentina, France. Yeah.
England. I think you talk about DNA. I think England need, and we talked about this before, so I'm not going to go into it, but they need, and this is why I'm going Farrell, 10. Massive unit, 12. That's the English way. Massive, horrible pack. That's England. That's how you win a World Cup.
Yeah.
And you're England.
You might be right. Tell you what, Dean Ryan's got his
Let's
hand.
Play. Oh, basically, sorry, what I'm saying is Warren Ball.
Yeah,
Eddie, it's time to play Warren Ball.
Hey, tell you what, well, he might be your next coach.
Yeah.
So you don't know.
Well,
him?
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, I know who the next coach is, and it's not him.
Because it's on that bit of paper.
It's on that bit of
hidden
paper.
In the
now,
safe.
I do think we should take the bits of paper outside your house. Because.
This is a massive scam by me. Shall I just say who it's going to be? I'll write it on the board.
No.
It's up to you.
We can. No, not yet.
I can take them. I can put them in my little.
Wait till the autumn internationals.
My little laptop pouch.
Yeah.
Keep wait till the autumn internationals.
Well, just on there, you take them because otherwise people are going to think that I think this is the greatest scam of all time.
Yeah. No.
Wouldn't
this
want
is,
that.
People, this you know what? It's like
I've got a guy who said that he'll house him in Bermuda. I should really do that, shouldn't I? We can call him up.
Mm.
In fact, actually, I'm not going to have the organisational skills yet. Phil, can you pick up those pieces of paper? Send them to Bermuda for me.
Pass them to me. I'll
leave
take
them there.
Them
the fact that we know where they are and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, like, but Jay's gonna. And even no, if he doesn't, he's going to get accused of it when he gets it right.
And I know who it is. That's the weird thing. I know who and when he'll be appointed.
Can I just say one thing? I saw my dad today and he had a little gift. He said, I thought you might like this, Tim. He gave me a gift. And I had to say, well, no, I didn't say this. What I thought was, I don't need this and I don't want this.
Oh.
I got offered a gift. And he bought me a... He knows that sometimes when I shave, I keep it with a bit of stubble.
Yeah.
So he bought me a razor which has adjustable lengths that you shave at.
Why?
Electric razor.
What?
And I said thanks and didn't want to be rude, but I genuinely got that today, but I thought, I don't need this.
You said thanks and just chucked it in the bin afterwards.
Chucked it in the bin because, actually, he could have saved himself all that money, and for £4, he could have got me Cornerstone razors.
That's a great idea.
What a present that is.
That'd be amazing.
For £4 as well.
For your autumn international shaves?
Exactly. He could have sorted me for the next few months, or now through the autumn internationals, for £4. But what I would have had at the end of that month is an engraved aluminium shaft that I could have put more Cornerstone razors on.
Engineered, but not weighty, because aluminium is used in aircraft.
There you go.
Perfectly balanced, I
think. Yeah. Great for travelling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic for travelling. So if you don't want to make the same mistake my dad did, then... Just take advantage of our offer with Cornerstone. £4 for a free aluminium engraved shaft. Have your initials on it. It'll stand there beautifully on the shelf in your bathroom. Have 6 precision engineered, award-winning Cornerstone razors delivered to you in a presentation box. Because you listen to us, you get that for £4.
Oh,
Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Or
Egg10 at checkout. There you go.
Buy some razors.
Buy razors. Make us rich. Pay our bills.
Yeah, we're not getting rich flogging razors, Jay.
Well, okay.
We're definitely not. We're sustaining the electricity for the rugby.
By the way, we're using a lot of electricity today.
Certainly are.
It's bloody hot in here.
It is hot in here. It's so hot.
Who is going to buy our champagne in Marseille when we go to Reportage?
Very good point.
There are some people that have already booked flights for that. We
no, they haven't.
Talked about it.
Oh, don't do it. Well, yeah, we're all going.
Oh, no, we're not doing a big live pod.
We're not doing a live pod.
We'll do a live piss-up.
Yeah, we will happily meet anyone
for a few beers. A live piss-up. We will tell you anecdotes and stories and we will talk rugby with you. It'll be like a live podcast just for you at the bar.
One of my favourite boozers in... Is it Nice we went to?
Yeah.
Bloody brilliant.
That Irish bar in Nice, yeah.
Phenomenal.
That was great. So that was when Scotland beat Australia.
Yeah, and Japon.
And Japon.
Did they draw with France?
Aperol spritzes with our Japon v France draw.
Ooh. Oh, well, I tell you what, it's a fun town. Real fun town. So I'm not saying live pod, right? But I'm happy to podcast in front of people, but it's not a live pod.
Well, we can
it's not going to be like a Madrid 2.
Well, like when we were outside the AJ Bell Stadium recently.
Yeah, exactly.
People sort of went, they'll come and sit on the bench with us, have a natter, and then go off to the bar.
What we did learn, right, is that on the Sunday... If we are lucky enough to go to World Player of the Year, we'll be lucky enough to go to World Player of the Year. what you actually have more than anything there is loads of time. So if we go to a podcast, we could podcast there.
Yeah.
At the World Player of the Year Awards.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Because I suppose we can probably just let Richie come and hang with us for a minute if we want, like he did last year.
Yeah, I hope Beauden Barrett doesn't win Player of the Year again, because he's already got a tie.
He's already got an Egg Chasers tie.
Yeah.
A bit awkward.
And Rico Ioane's already got a tie, so...
They'll be wearing them, presumably.
Yeah. I'd say so. Yeah. I'd say so.
Even though it's black tie.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So we need to make sure we've got a gift for them if they win the same awards again. But yeah, we can probably do the...
So, point being, there are the final places at the Rugby World Cup will be awarded to nations at the series of games over several weekends. The Repechage tournament, which is happening in Marseille, which the culmination of which is the World Player of the Year awards in Monaco. We are going to be there for the finals weekend, we think, in Marseille. So, yes. Anyone that's also fancies a rugby weekend away, a bit of a knees up, come and hang with us at a bar. We're not going to do a live podcast because of the logistics involved, but we will be having lots of beers and watching lots of rugby.
The repertoire should be fun.
It will be fun.
23rd, 24th of November.
Yeah,
that weekend.
And flights from the UK to Marseille are pretty
80 quid.
Cheap.
Yeah, 80 quid singles, because we'll be going into Marseille and out of Nice.
Christ, we'll play the... Rugby Awards again. Second year. Imagine places that we'd get if we were formally trained.
If only you had formal training,
my
baby.
My God, we'd be all over the place. Right, excellent. Shall we do some predictions?
The one thing there was no... The media room at the World Player of the Year
there were no.
It was a lot quieter than I imagined it would be, and should be. What are these people doing? Get yourself down there.
Well, there were two guys there, and they were both very, very nice.
Oh, lovely. Very affable, lovely chaps.
And they were good company.
Yeah, they were great.
But that's it. There's only two of them there.
Cracking event.
Fixtures next week.
We've got to very briefly mention one thing.
Ooh.
Panico.
Oh, Panico.
Panico what? On the streets of Rome.
What
are you doing, Panico?
Huh?
The prop Panico, the Italian prop Panico.
Sorry.
Who did he play for? It was Zebre.
I thought you meant the very fine Japanese breadcrumb.
Panko.
Right.
So cultured.
Yes. Guilty.
He's gone and done a Carmichael Hunt,
right.
It would seem.
So police have seized... Here's the facts. Police have seized 1.5 kilograms of marijuana, 330 grams of hashish, and 10,000 euros in cash stashed in his back garden in Rome.
Huh. All right, so you give us the facts. Give us the speculation. Come on.
He could well be facing a jail sentence, because that might be interpreted as way more... And the suspicious amount of cash, way more than your own personal use.
I've got a few issues here, right? Okay. First of all, I don't really know what these drugs do or the illegality around them. So
I don't know what hashish is.
Yeah, what is hashish, first of all?
I don't know the ins and outs. So I'm imagining it's just a...
Because it doesn't sound like one of the worst. But it sounds like something like...
No,
like, isn't that like what Middle Eastern men smoke? I don't know.
Let's not focus on the potency or the.
So I think that's the block. I think that's like the block, whereas marijuana's like the grass,
so like brown versus green.
I think
so. I thought hashish was like the pipes that people smoke. I'm sure my father-in-law.
Yeah, it probably is. I think it's like the resin or.
Oh, so yeah, it's a cannabis resin. Is hashish
okay. Right? Okay.
I don't know.
So.
Marijuana resin.
I mean, it's. I've never seen anyone stoned and disorderly.
Yeah, look, it certainly doesn't sound like the worst crime on earth. Now, here's the second bit, right? Most drug dealers, most down and out drug dealers, right? If you get 10,000 euros in cash and it's by your stash of drugs, you can probably put two and two together, can't you? You go, oh, yeah. Well, he's a down and out drug dealer. That's obviously where the cash has come from. This guy, this prop, is a man of means. He probably could get his hands on £10,000 worth of cash. So why did he stash it with his drugs? Because he could have legitimately just had it.
It's a confusing situation. God knows.
Where should I put my cash? With my drugs. Because that way, it'll be safe unless the authorities come round. One is legal, one isn't.
Well, there you go.
Obviously, Zebre aren't paying enough.
Yeah.
That's what this leads me to.
Why didn't he sponsor himself? And then he could basically launder it.
So he creates a fake company to sponsor himself.
Yeah, basically.
Create like a...
Was Better Call Saul company. Based on you as a financial advisor, JP?
Yeah, I mean, I've not thought this through. I mean, look, this is like radio maths. You know, I'm just doing it on the fly. But I'm sure we could wash it through so he could sponsor himself and then pay tax on the way out. Perfect.
Anyway, Panico.
Well, let's briefly touch on Leicester Sale then.
Have we not touched on this?
Have we?
I feel like we've covered all the pertinent points.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Well, we haven't spoke about Dorian West. And I do think that if Dorian West was in any other club, we would have spoken about it with a great deal of outrage.
Surprise is the biggest thing for me.
Yeah.
Tim?
I did not see it coming.
No,
yeah, not in the slightest.
I mean, this has obviously started a load of speculation, and I also want to say, right, because we have some people that clearly listen to the entire podcast, because right at the end of last week's podcast, JB made a spurious rumour about Willy Larue leaving.
Oh, yeah. Did anything happen? Has he gone?
No, he hasn't. But it was drawn to my attention that Wasps fans online were speculating that Egg Chasers have said this, and then the question was asked: was it JB or was it Tim Cocker that said it? And then then quotes were attributed to me that made it sound like I was backing up what you were saying. So I just want to make it absolutely clear: I know nothing of that, and I don't think it's happening. And JB was making a completely spurious claim. Same as on this, I'm not suggesting that my position means I know anything. I'm pointing out that people are linking the fact that Dorian West is at Sale to the fact that Jim Mallinder may soon be following him to Sale, because the two of those go together.
I'm not going to lie, right? If anyone else signed Dorian West, I don't think I'd be very charitable to that decision. That said, Steve Diamond knows a lot more about rugby than I ever will. So, and you could have said the same about Forshaw, you could have said the same about Deacon, both of whom had no rugby union experience, and I think have been majorly successful. So it depends how he's going to deploy him. And I think whereas Jim Mallinder was phenomenally loyal to Dorian West, and Dorian West had the first and last say on all things forwards, well, we all know who has the first and last say in Sale, and it's not going to be Dorian West. So it depends how they're going to use him, how they're going to deploy him. I wasn't delighted by it, but it might work. And I think Steve Down will have a good plan for this.
Do you think you can ever be fair and objective about anything Sale?
I think I am fair and objective. I think that was pretty fair and objective,
so,
no?
So you started that by saying if it was any other club, I would question it, but because it's Sale, it's okay.
Yeah, because I don't think any other club would have employed him the way that he's going to be employed, and no other club would have a guy like Steve Diamond overseeing him. So, the thing I find weird about it is they basically cover the same areas.
Yeah, that's one of the things that surprised me.
And they've also got another coach there called Dan Richmond, who I think is a really, really good coach. And, you watch it today and you see Dorian West telling Steve Diamond about the scrum. I'm pretty sure Steve Diamond knows about the scrum or about the line-out. So I guess he's just going to go there to implement some coaching. And, I think he'll probably be an asset to the club, is what I'd say.
There you go. There was another bit of coaching news this week with Rowntree.
Yes, gone to Georgia.
Yeah, which will be interesting to see. Much kind of
now. Is he going there to learn scrummaging from the Georgians?
Yeah, well, that's why I assume he's going to absorb it and bring it back.
He certainly has in the past been highly rated as a forwards coach.
Taken on Lions tours.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Well, when England were not particularly good, and I think was it Lancaster, he was a scrummaging coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Or was it?
He was a scrummaging coach right up to the World Cup, wasn't he?
Was he Lions scrummaging coach?
2013.
Did they win that one?
Yep.
Yeah.
One before that,
it was only Australia though.
I'm not sure if you
try to think of the setup. Before. And like, he's one of the few coaches that came out of it with like a glowing reputation.
Farrell, the one.
No, it was definitely in relation to, Rowntree. And actually, it might have been England because Farrell didn't come out of England with a glowing reputation.
Yeah, Rowntree was in 2009 as well.
Yeah, was that the one where they got pumped
against South Africa?
No, that doesn't make sense either. It doesn't matter.
Anyway,
it doesn't matter.
2005 was the one that got pumped against New Zealand.
The point is, he's a very, very competent coach. He'll add something. He'll probably learn something too.
Agreed.
There you go. Right, I think we've covered off just about everything except next week's fixtures.
Yes, let's do that then.
Rugby Championship.
What else? Whenever I travel and work at games, I don't get a chance to watch all of the rugby. What happened in the Pro 14 generally? Obviously, I know about Ulster. I know about Benetton.
Let's just quickly run through the results. So Ospreys beat Zebre away Leinster beat Connacht at Connacht, which we've already spoken about, the stamp.
Yeah.
Scots hammered Southern Kings. Munster just scraped past a weak Ulster team. Glasgow comfortably beat Dragons. Edinburgh snuck past 31-30, snuck past Benetton. And Cardiff edged the Cheetahs 24-21.
Okay. I'm looking forward to some meaty matchups in these, albeit there were some good games, the Benetton Edinburgh one, for example. But I want some derby matches soon. I want to see some of the big guns going head to head. But I guess that's not going to happen this coming weekend because
Tim,
yeah,
you missed out 23-26.
Oh yeah, good win at Goldington Road for London Scottish.
Yeah,
2-2 on the bounce for them now.
Great win.
Yeah. Look like they're adjusting to the.
Great coaching. Do you think they've finally caught up with the genius of the coaching mind?
I can't imagine that would be the reason. I'm sure it's just one of those things that happens when you bring in a lot of new players at the start of a season. But yeah, good win. That'll be on TV next week. London Irish v London Scottish.
Oh, is it?
Nice.
London Irish, by the way, who only just last few minutes Coventry. Got the winning try against Coventry.
Well, do you know who's managing Coventry now?
Was it Hamilton, the former Leicester?
Scott Himmelton?
No, he might have been there at one point.
Might have something to do with it, but no is the answer.
Sam Tuitupi was playing for them.
Correct.
Is he player coach? He's one of the coaches.
I was speaking to him at the Sale summer barbecue thing, and he was around, and it sounded very much like he was in charge, and he was hunting for new lads, and they've got a very close relationship with Leicester Tigers too.
They've got cash.
I think Leicester Tigers would love to lend them some players to become the biggest club in Coventry.
Absolutely.
So yeah,
they've got some cash and they're doing well. So
so when is London Irish London Scottish?
Sunday next week.
Oh, excellent! What time?
I don't know. 3 o'clock kickoff on Sky, I think.
Superb! I will definitely be watching that.
Anyway, or whenever it is, I'm not sure, but yeah.
Oh, and also, can I just mention one more thing? One more thing. Lyon beat Cast. Lyon beat Grenoble. 36-6 off the bench for 60 minutes was
the silverback himself, friend of the pod, Carl Ferns.
So great,
Fernsy.
Great to see him back.
Oh, I wonder if the only sad thing about his return is great. He's coming back in time for Europe. The World Cup. The bad thing is there are three artificial pitches on the away games, and will they want to risk his knee at Saracens? What are the chances out of a whole pool you get Cardiff, Glasgow and Saracens? That pool, by the way,
it's brutal, isn't it?
Anyway, we get to talk about that next weekend.
Next week, yeah.
Oh, by the way, next week, JB's in Portugal.
I am.
So we're going to be doing our podcast on Monday.
Monday night.
So, but what we will do is we will have a special podcast for you that is there on Monday morning, but it won't be the normal podcast. That will come a day later. But we're not going to leave you without anything for your Monday morning commute. We'll make sure you have something, and then we'll sort you out with an extra podcast.
No problem. So yeah, fine.
That's how we roll.
Because we're great guys. Great guys. Right.
Come on then.
Pro 14 first?
Pro 14.
Ulster Connacht, Friday night.
I am a bit worried about Ulster.
This is so
many injuries, but yeah, there is a. Oh yeah, it's all.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's
all local, apart from the Scotland.
But will it be all
more than just a derby?
More than just a derby, yeah. But will it be derbies except for some sides, but not with full strength teams because it's the week before Europe?
Well, yeah, you're right. There's no way Leinster are putting out a full strength squad.
Of course, correct.
Oh wow!
And Ulster couldn't possibly put out a full-strength squad because everyone's injured. So I'm a bit worried that Ulster are going to lose to Connacht at home.
Mm. Shall we just pick the games as if they had full-strength teams?
Yeah.
Okay, Ulster to win.
Yeah. Glasgow to win.
Yeah, Edinburgh to win. Although that'll be a good game, Edinburgh Cheetahs.
Yeah. Yeah, it will actually. Cheetahs came very close to winning at Cardiff.
Mm, yeah.
Can't believe that.
Yeah.
Scarlets should beat Ospreys.
Correct.
Dragons will lose to Cardiff.
Correct.
These are good. I'm looking forward to these games.
But we don't know what the game is, do we?
We
know the shirts they're wearing,
no,
but we don't know what the game is.
Yeah, but even without full-strength teams, Scarlets v Ospreys and Dragons v Blues, there's niggle there. There's history.
Yeah, I mean, to a degree there is, but Scarlets are so much better than Ospreys.
Leinster A versus Munster A will be an entertaining game.
Yeah, because they're fighting for... what are they fighting for? They're fighting for Wolfhound jerseys.
Yes. Yeah. There you go.
But all being equal, Leinster. And all being first team, then Leinster at home.
Yes.
And then
I'm so looking forward to seeing them.
And Treviso should steamroller the Kings, I imagine.
100 points against the Kings.
Minimum, I'd say.
Yeah.
Minimum.
There is some rugby championship again, the final round. New Zealand have already won it.
Okay.
So Argentina play Australia at 20 to midnight UK time.
Perfect.
And South Africa host New Zealand.
I had a few beers last night after Sock H's win against Littleborough, and came in a little bit drunk, had a Chinese, settled down in bed, about to drop off, and then an alarm went on my phone saying All Blacks about to kick off. I was like, this is brilliant.
Do you know what? That's the great thing. What people will learn, if nothing else, about the suburb of Chorlton in Manchester from these podcasts is the variety of cuisine you can eat whilst watching your late night rugby.
Specifically,
chicken burger,
yeah.
Chinese.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, did I actually tell you?
You love a Canada Grill.
I do. I used to love a Canada Grill pizza. There's nothing better, is there, after ingesting 5,000 calories in beer than to ingest another 2,000 from a Canada Grill double pepperoni pizza. It's so unhealthy for you drinking. It really is.
But you need it post-game. You need to recover.
Yeah.
You need
those electrolytes.
Calories. Refuel.
Refuel.
Yeah, we really refueled. We refueled a lot last night. So I'm looking forward to the South Africa game, is what I'm saying. But I'm looking forward to both of them. They're both good games.
I think Argentina will win, and I think New Zealand will correct the wrongs of last week.
Yeah, probably right.
Or 2 weeks ago.
Where does this leave Australia? Just like rudderless, in shark-infested, rough waters.
If Australia lose to Argentina, they'll have only won one game.
Yeah.
And they'll finish dead last.
Jeez.
At the table.
And 11 months out from a World Cup, they've radically changed what they're doing.
The worst thing for Australia is, so they have scored 79 points in 5 games, which is 40 points less than Argentina.
Wow.
So, the same 5 games.
So you boys know Rugby Reg?
Yeah.
From Green and Gold?
Yeah.
So we had a Twitter exchange last night, and I just asked him a simple question. Like, I don't think it's the players, because the talent is there. Must be down to the coaches. And fundamentally agree. It says something really interesting, which is like, basically, it's still a hangover from things that Eddie Jones did, which I think is a really interesting point of view. But it is the coaching, and they're going to have to, I think, change a coach. I don't know who they can bring in. I'm not sure of any Australian qualified candidate that I can think of immediately.
Other than
look at World Cups gone by. Let's judge it in a year's time. They got to a World Cup final when we were saying the same things.
They will raise the
in
game.
The past. So,
hey, it's in their DNA.
New Zealand, Argentina wins.
Yeah. Then Gallagher Premiership.
Yes.
Friday night. Now, Tim, are you working any of these?
I am.
Yes,
I am working this one Friday night.
So this. So Southwest Derby, Bath hosting Exeter. Now, yeah. Bath will have rested all their players, all their players, so they'll be as full strength as they can possibly be, considering their injuries.
I feel this derby somewhat passed Bath by, you know, because Bath never considered Exeter to be their derby.
Nope.
Because obviously there are closer teams.
Bristol, Gloucester. Yeah.
They used to look down their nose at Exeter, so they never really took them that seriously. And now Exeter will thoroughly hammer them, and have been doing so for a few years. They've just sort of missed the derby thing completely, whereas Exeter see this as their derby.
Yeah.
So, Bath are going to get hammered.
And Exeter and Bath both have massive games the week after. Bath host Toulouse and Exeter host Munster, so that's not going to...
Ooh. And it'll be Munster that's well refreshed.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I noticed Exeter took off, for example, Sam Simmons at half-time. So they've rested players in a different way to Bath, but they have been managing workloads. But
yeah. So we all say an Exeter win?
Yes. Comfortable Exeter win. Hear me now, believe me later.
I don't think it'd be that comfortable.
I don't think it'd be that comfortable.
Nope.
I think Exeter will win.
Exeter by 5.
8.
Exeter by a bonus point.
They might score 4 tries, but if they do, I think Bath will be within touching distance.
I think the way Bath play, right, they've got to be consistently scoring points. They've got to be very, 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 very close in a low-scoring game. And they've got to be basically on top for most of that, because they can't chase down a score.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, they haven't been good in second halves.
Yeah.
All season.
Because, yeah, we do forget. They were actually in touching distance of Saracens at half-time.
Yeah. Yeah. Six points down at half-time. They were ahead of Gloucester in going into the last 10. They were ahead of Bristol.
Were they?
Into the second half.
No, Bristol were ahead.
Harlequins was the other game. No, what was the one that they... What was the other loss? What was the one they lost?
They've only lost one.
Oh, no, they lost two now. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, they've been losing lots of tries late in games. Anyway.
Okay.
I think
Northampton. Cobus Reinert scored at the end.
Yes, that's correct.
There you go.
Thank you.
There we go. Pleasure.
The other games. So on Saturday, we've got two televised games. What's the early game? It's Northampton.
Northampton letter from Twickenham.
Twickers.
I'm working that one as well.
Nice. That should be a
Rob
good game.
Game.
Yeah, it'd be a good game. The Flapman video again, Flaps video is very, very good.
Very funny.
The Channel 5 one. And you can donate. I've not got the place to donate.
I will look that up whilst you go through the.
It is a very good cause, this game. I'm going to go with Northampton.
I'm going to go Northampton.
It's the easiest team talk to ever give for Chris Boyd. And they're scoring points, something that Leicester are struggling to do.
I think this game could ignite fiery. It's going to be... It means something, this match, doesn't it?
It does.
And then, as you say, there's added motivation and elements. So I think Northampton will edge it in a very entertaining game, I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Another basement battle as well is on at 3 p.m.
Yeah. Two teams have only got one win. Sale hosting Newcastle. Two teams that'll be absolutely desperate to get a win.
Do you know what? I just think the way that these two teams are playing, it's got to be Newcastle. I mean, Newcastle lost in a good way. I.e. they played good rugby.
Oh, but the number of basic mistakes that they... Unforced errors.
I know, but you know, they're making line breaks. Have I mentioned Johnny Williams has been playing well?
You might have mentioned.
You know, Gary Graham is everywhere. You know, some of their guys are playing well.
What they need to do is bring, which they struggled because of the failure to get continuity. But when they bring Sanotti and Gonover into the game, those two are unplayable at times.
The rolling ball of barbed wire.
Oh, him stepping Marcus Watson and accelerating. I can't remember who.
The feet were ridiculous.
It was unbelievable for the Mark Wilson try, and it's the feet, but it's also. It's the speed and the power that he's got with it as well. Phenomenal.
His, like, Sanotti's forehead muscles are massive.
So, yeah, give me Newcastle. I think Newcastle are going to, come good.
Johan Hansi van Rensburg will probably
Rohan
start.
Yanti.
Rohan Yanti van Rensburg. We'll probably start for Sale.
Maybe.
Get some good go forward.
Yeah. Looking at him today, I'm thinking he might want to come on the last 30. Give Sale some go forward.
He's a big boy.
He's a large human.
He's put on some timber. I was looking back at some pictures of him where he's so muscular but so like defined.
He does look bigger than he did for the Lions.
Yeah. He mix of good weight and bad weight. He looks enormous.
Looks like he's about to play in top 14.
Tight head prop.
No, he still looks like a centre.
I think Sale. Let's not forget Sale should have beaten Wasps at home.
Yeah, and if they'd have had a kicker.
Yeah, they should have actually.
They would have beaten Leicester.
And if they had a kicker, they'd have beaten Leicester. I'm going Sale.
Give me Newcastle.
Yeah, you're right. Sale.
Sale. Wasps hosting Gloucester.
Wasps.
Yeah, give me Wasps.
They just find ways to win. I'm bored of betting against them and losing.
Wasps.
And so Wasps have only lost one game. Sopawanga, who got three assists in that match, is looking better, and he will continue to get better and better and better.
Looking forward to a Saturday evening game.
Yeah, this will be good. Prepare us nicely for the Champions Cup Saturday evening games as well. I love having the 1, 3, 5, and 7 games of the Champions Cup.
So good.
Harlequins host Saracens. Now, you would imagine Saracens will take the opportunity to like freshen their squad a little bit.
100% they will. 100%. I'm going to be studying the depth charts for fantasy rugby draft signings.
Yeah, they also might be losing Brad Barrett.
Why?
He went off with a bad cut to the plate.
It's a really nasty cut, actually. Apparently it went down to the plate, the cut. So I imagine he'll have next week off.
He's got a plate in there.
He's got a plate in there from a previous.
So does he look a little bit like Terminator when he came off today?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Pretty much the same. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, they were like Saracens will rest players.
It never fails to amaze me how brave these blokes are. If I had a plate in my
face... Rugby's going soft, haven't you heard?
What? When? Who said this?
I hate the argument rugby's going soft because they put their bodies on the line so much. It's such a physically demanding game.
The only thing that's going soft... Forget it.
Quins versus Saracens will actually be a good test because Quins... They'll
Quins
put out a full strength team.
This is going to be a Quins win. I'll tell you what, it's going to be a Quins win because they shouldn't win this. They should be them destroyed, atomised. But they'll win it. It'll be purely so we don't know what Quins are really like. And we do know what they're like. They're a bad team that win games that they shouldn't.
They can win any game. Any single game they can win.
Yeah, I think they're going to beat Saracens and make us all look stupid.
There you go. I want to say Saracens based on form. I will reserve full judgment until the teams come out.
Saracens with a caveat that the team may not be.
Yeah,
Saracens. I can just see Mark Smith running all around Saracens.
I hope so. For my fantasy rugby draft team,
I got 140 points.
I probably shouldn't be doing. No, that's fine.
I got 140 points.
Betting on rugby would be a different matter.
Very
different. I would not recommend that. Go on. Is that it? Is that everything?
No,
final
Sunday.
Game. This is another basement battle. This will be very important come the end of the season. So on a plastic pitch, Worcester host Bristol.
Bristol.
I think you might be right. Although they're not the same team away as they are home.
How have they done away so far? So they won two at home. Plus two bonus points.
Lost two away and one at home.
Big plastic pitch. They're going to be ace.
Yeah. Worcester.
I'm going to say Worcester. Benteo probably making his comeback.
Has Benteo had a single good game in? No. He's had a single good game. Has he had back to back good games for Worcester?
He's not played that much rugby in the last 2 years.
He hasn't, and yet he signs up in the England squad. And yet people who aren't in the England squad are playing.
Oh come on! He toured with the Lions and looked great.
He did look good for the Lions.
He doesn't need to justify his selection like that.
It's also a sign of the way.
And that was just a training squad as well.
It's one way that England can play. So England have played with Farrell there as a second playmaker. I think Eddie does want to get away from that.
You know who I'd pick?
Alex Good.
No, Johnny Williams. I've told him multiple times.
All right.
And that's it.
I'm going to say Worcester just.
Yeah, give me Worcester. Spice it up at the bottom a bit. The bottom four teams are playing each other.
Yeah.
So you could, if Sale lose that, they could find themselves adrift.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite serious now. But mind you, who would have thought Newcastle? I mean, this table looks not dissimilar to what it might look like 4 years ago.
How many weeks into the season before the ring fencing is next mentioned? Because it hasn't been mentioned yet, but it will be soon.
It's always mentioned.
Well, I mean, I've been on record many a time saying I think ring fencing is exactly the way forward. I've never, ever liked promotion relegation. And I've got a feeling I'm going to be calling for ring fencing again this year.
So I don't mind ring fencing. My only concern is the sensational job that Exeter have done. since coming up. It does stop that from ever happening again.
I'm happy with that. Yeah, yeah. Leave it as it is.
Imagine if we never had Big Dave and Big Don.
What would have happened? Who would be? I mean, would it just be Saracens? I guess it'd just be Saracens battering everyone. And who would be in instead of them? London Irish, I guess, or Leeds.
Yeah, London Irish and Leeds are the two other academies.
There we go. That's the rugby. That's your fill.
2 hours worth of rugby there.
What?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
No, 2 hours.
It felt like three.
Well, a shout out this week goes to Louch JD, at Louch JD, big Exeter Chiefs fan.
Huge Exeter Chiefs fan.
Who last week tweeted us after we finished recording the pod at 2:30 in the morning, and he finished finished listening to an hour and a half of us rambling by 5:30 in the morning.
What?
Wow.
So that is as close to listening live as you could possibly get at that time. So fair play. Well done, Louch.
Louch, go see your doctor about that insomnia. There's pills you can take, mate. The podcast clearly is too entertaining and didn't send you off to sleep. Sorry about that. I reckon he got up for a pee in the middle of the night, saw on his phone, new episode alert.
Yes. Yeah,
and then he put his headphones in and listened to the whole thing.
Somebody tweeted me the other day. I think it was a Rugby Dungeon thing that they tweeted me about. And they said something along the lines of, I'm just making this up now, but it's something along the lines of, like, thank you for the pods. I listened to them when I came ashore. I thought, ooh, that always perks my interest. And it turns out this guy's like he's like working on some merchant navy vessel, which I find incredibly exciting. So if you've got a really exciting job and you're listening to, that's what he did. He downloaded all the pods before he went to sea.
Come on. If
you've got an incredibly interesting job and you listen to our podcast in a weird place, let us know.
Do you know what we need? We need to connect the British Merchant Navy with the people that installed the Wi-Fi in the Worcester Warriors Academy house.
Yeah.
Surely there's something we can do.
Or maybe the people that installed the Wi-Fi in the Worcester Warriors Academy house should go and install some Wi-Fi at the AJ Bell to stop nasty articles being written about them. It's a long article to write about lack of Wi-Fi, isn't it?
It's annoying, Jay.
Oh, God.
When you can't stream whatever you want to stream in the Worcester Warriors house.
Right, serious point here. I use 4G on my phone for podcasts. What we do with this podcast is far more data intensive than anything which someone tapping away on a computer does. Do we disagree or agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like cut and dry. And I always, if the number one thing that I needed to do my job was access to the internet, I would do what I do. I would get some good 4G. I'd get some good 4G. Apparently, that's beyond the pale because they've got to upload pictures. There you go.
Oh, those JPEGs. Man, data eaters.
Sure, it's not even the journalists doing that. It's the photographers.
Who knows?
No, they wanted to see replays.
Oh, sorry, the replays.
At their seats. At their seats. Who has replays at their seats? No one. No one.
I do.
Yeah.
Serious point.
I do. I get a monitor.
Do you?
Yes.
Do you?
Well, to be fair, I'm saying it like it's for me. It's not. I sit next to Martin Bayfield and I look over his shoulder, his huge shoulder.
How do you look
monitor.
Over his shoulder? What equipment are you using for that?
just four cushions.
The Hong Kong Yellow Pages.
It's a cherry picker, industrial cherry picker for the same one they use to adjust the pitch lights.
Yes.
The high B pitch lights.
Exactly that.
Right.
Let's go home. Let's wrap this up.
One last point. So the question I asked before on what was your initial reaction to the Joe Marler news, the first thing I thought when I heard it was, how much are the Rugby Pod paying him?
Ah! Yeah. Sneaky
devils. They can afford 15 to say goodbye to 15 times 25 per year.
To make sure you're available for the Rugby Pod.
It's a lot of cash, isn't it? It's a lot of cash.
It's handy.
I mean, it's a potential World Cup. It's physical brutality. But I think I could suck up all of that for that money. If I was purely motivated by cash alone and not the possibility of playing in a World Cup, I could suck that up.
Yeah.
Which does, so that does, to me, say it is a really genuine.
It's like a conversation, right? You have when you're drunk, and you're all like, and you throw out an outlandish statement, like, "How much would it cost for you to do such and such?" Oh, I would never do that unless it was £1 million, right?
What sort of things? No, no, don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we all know the sort of things.
You know, the kind of, you know, things that you might talk about when that would cost me £1 million. And then you go, £1 million, really? What if I had 10 grand on the table right now? Because that's a substantial discount. That's a lot of money. And you realise, you know, for 300K, there is a lot of stuff I would do for a prolonged period of time.
Well, yeah, 300K for the next 5 years. Additional 300K per year for the next 5 years.
Yeah. And I'll tell you the other thing as well. Have I always said this? I've probably already said it because it's been 2 hours since I said it last. So, yeah, I would do a lot of things for 300K.
There we go. That's the new Twitter. Ask JB if he would do it for 300K, and
there
he can just reply.
You go. Hashtag what would JB do for 300K, and post your questions at Rugby Podcast at JB Edmore.
Hashtag would JB.
Yeah, for 300K.
Hashtag would JB, and okay. Then ask him if he'd do it.
Oh, yeah, pretty much would do. Perfect.
Right. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.